Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, yesterday everything went wrong. We had something happened with the Blog Talk website, and I was unable to do the show. Today I'm here. Today I'm all set and ready, so this is going to be fun. We're just waiting for our guest of honor, Dr. Peter McCullough, to call in. And so as soon as he gets here, I'm going to go right to him. And so I just text him the number again. I've got I've got messages flying back and forth. All right, so there we go. So just checking on stuff. Yep, my secret agent says everything's all set. Diane Warner, who does our election integrity, medical freedom, whatever we want report, is on the line right now too. So Diane, we're just waiting for our guest of honor. How you doing?
Good.
Okay. Did I surprise you bringing? Say that again.
Right. I'm glad the Blog Talk is working this morning.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, it's, we do have occasional glitches. I've had to call in the phone, call into my own show and things like that. But generally when we have a guest like Dr. Peter McCullough, it usually goes well. Like I said, I'm just waiting for him to call. And so anytime now, a lot of times shows have news breaks and commercials in the beginning, but I just want to make sure that he doesn't think we're calling him. So just these little administrative things that make talk radio so much fun. So again, as soon as he joins,
and he is Central Time, right?
Well, we did tell him. Yeah, I mean, he knows. if it's Eastern, that would have been an hour ago. That wasn't on the air then.
Yeah.
And so, no.
Exactly.
Yep.
Now, he was in Texas, right?
I'm not sure where he is. That's a good question.
He started in Texas. He was at Baylor.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, if you have some background, let me know. We can kind of do that while we're waiting.
Yeah, I've been following him since the very beginning, since he started making waves about everything, and I'm like, this guy's telling the truth.
It's interesting how a lot of us kind of came together now. Yeah, but we all started in different places. I started doing this on the radio, way back February of 2020. I'm like, nah, this is wrong. why would you have a vaccine for a virus that's already here when they take at least 10 years, to get right, probably closer to 15? I said, this makes no sense. And that's when I started, noticing this hard little man who I've become, started calling Dr. Fascist, a long time ago. And so, yeah. And so then Dr. Peter McCullough and then Judy Mikovits and the first person that I noticed was actually Dr. Didier Raoult in Marseille, France. And so that's what really kind of got me started. So wait a minute, we got a cure. We got this thing called, I called it chloroquine in those days, and it's chloroquine. And then I learned about hydroxychloroquine, and then I learned about Dr. Zelenko, and then a friend of mine introduced me to Dr. Zelenko, and of course, the rest is history. He came on the show, we wrote a bill together, and I've been, I've been crusading against this ever since February. Actually, what started us, we had, my friend Dr. Peter Pry brought us. There he is. Okay, good. We're all set to go. So Dr. Pry brought us Bill Gertz, who told us about the Wuhan lab February 25th. Let me get right to our guest of the day here. So I'm scrolling madly through my stuff. Let me see if I can find it. Ah, here we go. I want to introduce our guest of the day, Dr. Peter McCullough. So this is one of the rare privileges that we get to have somebody like Peter McCullough on the show, and it's going to be fascinating to see how this goes. But just to give you a little background, from his website, he brings truth to the world and fights battles against censorship and reprisal. He is an internist, cardiologist, epidemiologist, and the chief scientific officer of the Wellness Company. Dr. McCullough is one of the most published cardiologists ever in America, with over 1,000 publications and 660 citations in the National Library of Medicine. So let's make his line live. And welcome to the show. Dr. McCullough, welcome to Action Radio.
Well, thanks for having me. I never had a ticker tape parade before coming on the show, but that was great.
Well, it gets better. We got to cheer you. That's for everything
that's
you
fantastic.
Do. It's just
The crowd is electric. Thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming on the show. This is going to be different. We are, I like to say, the most unique show in the world in that we have a citizen legislature as well as a radio show. And the two combine in a unique combination that is, I think, once we get more exposure, it's going to be able to do amazing things. But I want to we know your background. The audience knows the problems. I started off, you know, like I just said, with Bill Gertz, February 25th, February 27th of 2020. I wrote a resolution for Congress that they could only spend half their money on vaccines. The other had to be spent on early treatments. So I was right there in the beginning, right with you, and I didn't even know you yet. And all the other folks, and I got to meet Dr. Zelenko. He was on the show. We wrote a bill together to reform the FDA. And I've got two big bills I want to talk to you about in a little bit, one on vaccine product liability and the other one ending big tech censorship. But first things first, is there anything new, anything that's happened in the last little bit that you want to report or talk about, new campaigns, new things, new avenues of resisting the medical tyranny that's going on right now?
You know, I think one of the single biggest revelations that we've had have come through these release of the Twitter files. I had one of the top doctor Twitter accounts for a long time, and mainly doctors follow me, and I produced the scientific abstracts and important analyses. I was suspended from Twitter for about 2 months in late 2022 and then restored when Elon Musk purchased the company. But when it was released that the FBI agents were in Twitter, and the CDC was Twitter, and what was going on is they were suppressing any hope of treatment to the world's population. They really were suppressing any advancements that people could find out about. And you know, our publication cycles take about 2 to 4 years to publish a paper, so we needed something rapid. And so Twitter was really an important tool, that and the preprint service system. But to find that there was active suppression of treatment in order to promote the vaccines. And then in promotion of the vaccines, it was active suppression of life-saving safety information. So, you know, as doctors started to watch patients sustain heart damage, blood clots, neurologic damage, it came out in the literature. The FDA agreed that these complications occurred. People were scrambling to find out information, where they at risk, what they should do. This was all being actively directed by the intelligence community, the CDC and ASSIST, and that's what's going on. It's probably still going on within YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. The understanding that this was a U.S. government national security operation upon its own people causing great harm, I think, is the most disturbing revelation.
Yeah, that's incredible, and I'm looking at this, and as one who has been suppressed along with everybody else, I mean, my listenership and views on Facebook and have just been plummeted ever since it came out March 2nd of 2020, saying that the virus is real, but the response is a total hoax, and that's when I started calling Fauci Dr. Fascist, you know, his full title being the genocidal, avaricious, narcissistic, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. And so, you know, it never made sense to me that, and I used to say this too, all roads lead to vaccines. Of all the things to do with a virus that's already here, knowing the vaccines, and I'm not a doctor, but just knowing the vaccines take 10 to 15 years before they're even considered safe, why would Congress and why would the government go along with this one path only, this one approach in vaccines, and make everything else, you know, below it or not even considered? This seems to be exactly what you're talking about, the operation, you know, the intelligence community and everything else. But how do we get to this point where one person and big government health could direct, the entire medical world, you know, in the United States away from early treatments? How did that happen?
You know, I published a book with John Leake earlier in 2022 called Courage to Face COVID-19. Preventing hospitalizations and deaths while battling the biopharmaceutical complex. And we define this complex. It is a fusion of worldwide government agencies, NGOs, and then there are suppliers. But this complex is positioned at the top. We believe the World Economic Forum, they're actually meeting in Davos as we speak.
Right.
The World Health Organization, Wellcome Trust, the Rockefeller Foundation, Gates Foundation, CEPI, which Gates Foundation and WEF found, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness and Innovation, the TGA, the MHRA, FDA, CDC, NIH, looks like the intelligence community, they are all aligned on a singular activity, and that is worldwide mass vaccination for one pandemic after another. Now, that's what I said. Listen, this is just going to be the goal here. It's aspirational. The aspirational is to get a needle in every arm. As a doctor, you know, I was fielding these patients like so many others, and innovating, publishing, finding ways to treat patients. And at any given time, it was a small fraction of people who actually had the disease. So if we would have focused on the illness and not focused on well people, remember, everything the government suggested was focusing on well people, hand sanitizers, masks, vaccines. Well, well people are well. They're not of a public health concern. The greatest concern are the sick people who could be hospitalized and dying. Those are the two important outcomes. So when I hit the Texas Senate I hit the U.S. Senate, actually, in November of 2020, and then the Texas Senate in 2021, and ultimately went on Tucker Carlson and broke all the records for Joe Rogan and what have you, you know, that was the theme, is where is the focus on the people sick right now, and get this focus off people who are well, who need to go about their lives.
This is fascinating. In fact, I'm hoping to get you to introduce me to both Tucker and Joe Rogan, because their audiences are huge, as are yours. And if we get these folks sending in the bill links to vaccine product liability and ending big tech censorship, the citizen legislature, you know, takes on a whole new meaning, and it's a way to combat big pharma. And everybody's always asking the question, you know, what can I do? You know, how can we take our country back? Well, it's easy. We figured that out here at Action Radio. But I was watching your video, and we were watching it last night, and I've watched both Senate hearings with Senator Johnson, and you came out with four pillars of pandemic response, and it's all geared around early treatment. And it seems to me, and I wrote this down from something that I thought of before, that they made the legal illegal so that they can make the illegal legal. They made the legal, the approved drugs, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, the Zelenko protocol, vitamin D3, vitamin C. We've been over this for years with my audience. Those were demonized and made illegal and said that you couldn't have an emergency use authorization for that, so that they could take their vaccines, which were gene jabs, you know, the mRNA and everything that goes into that, and made them legal. So they actually reversed the law in order to do this. That took some power to be able to do that. And as a doctor, well, you're sitting there watching this going, why? What's going on here?
It, from the very beginning, was a national security operation. It wasn't a public health operation. So Department of Defense, the DOD and HHS ran this. You know, when the vaccines were rolled out, it was DOD, HHS. EUA is a military mechanism. It previously had only been used for the military, for anthrax and smallpox, things like this. So EUA is not a public health mechanism. So this military mechanism was then used to bring forward the products. And under the EUA, it's unclear if they even need to be FDA approved. The FDA actions look like they're window dressing. They haven't really seriously addressed the safety. They haven't seriously addressed the efficacy. There's been no analyses. And it looks like what the FDA is going to say in the end is, hey, listen, EUA is a military thing. It's a national security thing. We had to step back. That's what they're going to say. What we know is that the existing products, a generic available product, can be used for anything the doctor wants to. The community standard of care is what doctors decide, not agencies or medical boards. And these entities have never determined the community standard of care, which is widely varied from region to region. But the doctors like myself, Zelenko, Didier Rialt, others, Tyson and Farid, all the doctors who step forward and treat patients, we establish the community standard of care. So when I hit the Senate floor, I said, listen, this pandemic response, and I'm a doctor in a position of medical authority before COVID-19, I told the country, listen, we need four pillars. We need four work groups. One is on reducing the spread of the illness, and that what turned out to be the most important thing to reduce spread of the illness was virucidal nasal washes and sprays, and dilute povidone iodine, dilute hydrogen peroxide. You know, the virus goes right through the mask and around the mask. We actually had to treat the virus in the nose in people who had incipient infections to knock it down. It's sort of supported by 12 clinical studies. We use it as part of all of our protocols now. It reduces the PCR positivity from about 2 weeks to about 2 to 3 days. It was the only way to do it. Nancy Mace, Congresswoman, went nuts when this came out and said, why isn't our government featuring this very simple approach, which was taken up in a lot of places around the world. It was pioneered, actually, in Bangladesh. So that was pillar number one. Should have been virucidal nasal sprays and washes, actually actively suppressed by the FDA and FTC. They didn't let any of the companies do research on it or advance those. Pillar number two was early treatment, multi-drug protocols within the first 3 days. The only way to prevent a hospitalization is to do something before the hospital. That was just such a simple set of logic. Our government refused to make that a national priority, and that's where That's where the lives were lost. Pillar number three is hospital treatment. There's still not enough discussion about this. Do you know that Mayo Clinic, Harvard, Duke, none of our marquee institutions ever advanced their inpatient protocols? None of them. None of them had any innovations. There's no comparative mortality statistics, no comparative ventilator statistics. None of these institutions even claim to be centers of excellence for this very important illness. We've had 3 years of this, and our marquee medical centers absolutely fell flat on this, and I think historians are going to record this. What in the world was going on in the halls of these incredible institutions where they couldn't take care of COVID patients and advance the care? It was atrocious. And then pillar number four was vaccination. I don't think anybody was against a vaccine, but looking backwards, because it's a nasopharyngeal infection, mm-hmm. It looks like the only vaccine type that ever would have been useful would have been a nasal mist vaccine, and it should have been antigen-based, where it could never install genetic code in the human body, and should have only been attempted in high-risk people. We're looking at nursing home patients, seniors at high risk. So early on, I was sketching this out. I was thinking maybe 2.7 million Americans would be exposed to a vaccine. Nobody was against them. I've taken all the vaccines in the schedule. I'm not anti-vaccine, but I didn't take the COVID vaccine. It's the genetic code for the lethal protein, engineered in a lab in Wuhan, China, produced in the body in an uncontrolled manner. There was no way I was going to take the COVID vaccine. I was stunned how many doctors took it. It was a very dangerous proposition from the very beginning.
See, that's the shocking part, is that how many doctors went along with this. It seemed to me like we went to a national healthcare model, or now actually an international healthcare, and you're way ahead of me on the bioweapon and the national security, so I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that. But the idea that the doctors all fell in line, and the hospitals fell in line, and all the pharmacists and all the drugstores, and they're all giving these COVID gene jabs to people, and nobody was testing immunity first. No one thought, this is another thing that always stunned me. It's like, before you give, a gene jab, wouldn't you at least test to see if the people are already immune to it? So this is a fix from the start. Sir, go ahead.
Well, the clinical definition was good enough. Remember in the clinical trials, the registrational clinical trials, if somebody had a prior history of COVID, they knew they had it, they had a well-documented case. By the way, 94% of Americans now have had COVID. A well-documented case of COVID excluded someone from ever getting the vaccine. And then if you had positive antibodies, even if you had a subclinical infection, they were excluded. Pregnant women were excluded, women of childbearing potential. So even the original exclusion criterion for trials immediately were disregarded. I was stunned in the first week of the vaccine program when pregnant women started to take the vaccine, when people who already had the illness. We never do that. I mean, if a child had chickenpox, we wouldn't turn around and give a chickenpox vaccine. We would never do that. If a child had mumps, we wouldn't turn around and give the mumps vaccine. When I saw these things happen early in December 2020, I said, wait a minute. We are violating every tenet of good clinical practice, just violating them. And, the very first person who injected a pregnant woman and the very first pregnant woman who took the vaccine had to know that they were embarking on an odyssey where there is no assurances that this could possibly be safe or effective. And it simply was, it was an aspiration to get a needle in every arm and with no regard to safety. And I think historians will forever write about this for clearly the rest of our lifetimes what a debacle that was. It's always safety, safety, safety. We, by early in January, we had so many different data systems ticking up. The COVID-19 vaccines should have been pulled off the market by February of 2021. We had about 27 million Americans vaccinated at that time, and they should have been pulled off for excess mortality, just like any other product. We have hundreds of products pulled off the market. So listen, we tried it. It didn't work out. People were passing away. We need to study this, what was happening. Even Pfizer, within 90 days, knew about 1,223 deaths. People were taking the vaccine, dying within a day or two, and people were calling Pfizer in desperation, saying, my loved one just died of the vaccine. Pfizer dutifully recorded all these numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were pressed to release this, in the court proceedings under FOIA, the lawyer for the FDA did not want to release that data source from Pfizer to the public for 55 years. So we have evidence our FDA is actively involved in a safety disaster cover-up, and Pfizer being one of the suppliers, a safety disaster cover-up. Imagine recording 1,223 deaths in the corporate offices of Pfizer, and the Pfizer execs don't shut it down. They probably figure, listen, we're just a supplier to this national security program. The FDA saying, well, listen, we can't stop it anyway. It's a DOD HHS program. And just letting this go on and then actually trying to block this later on, cover it up so American doesn't know about this. This is extraordinary.
Yeah, and this is what I want to ask you about, because I have a bill I want to get to, our Vaccine Manufacturer Full Product Liability Restoration Act, which I wrote in 2021, March 31st. And so this has been around for a while. In fact, Senator Johnson sent him a copy. My own congressman, Matt Gaetz, has a copy. But I want to, this is new to me, the DOD HHS, because you said this a few times. And why are they working together? What is the program as bad as we think, that this is a bioweapon, that this is designed for world population control? What's the bottom line here? What have you been able to find out?
You know, go to the website for DARPA, D-A-R-P-A. That's the research unit of the military. It's on the website mm-hmm. today. In 2012, they announced a program called the ADEPT P3 program, the Protect Pandemic Program. And they announced in 2012 they will use messenger RNA vaccines to end pandemics in 60 days. That was a DARPA program. It still is today. And they started organizing it with DARPA consultants, and the money started flowing. Moderna received its first government money in 2013 to make messenger RNA vaccines. And so this is a U.S. government aspiration. It came out of the military. And, you know, Pfizer didn't dream this up. Moderna didn't dream this up. This was a government-directed opportunity. Now, the research division of the NIH, BARDA, they were directing work on the virus. And so one of the lead institutions was the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Ralph Barrick is a senior investigator.
Right.
Menachery was the first author. You know, two papers in 2015, meaning they did the work from 2012 forward. But the papers were in 2015 in very good journals. So Nature Communications and the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences are just available on the website. Just look it up. Menachery, first author. In the title of the paper, both papers say the emergence of SARS-CoV-2 in the human populations. They were working on this. They were making the virus more invasive and more lethal. It was gain-of-function research. They couldn't do it in the United States. So specifically they said, we're going to contract this to the lab in Wuhan, China. It's a U.S. government operation, and there's similar anthrax programs, similar smallpox, monkeypox programs. So in the biological threat area of research, there's two assets held. One asset is the threat, the infectious disease that could cause damage as a biological threat. And then there's the countermeasure. The countermeasures are vaccines, monoclonal antibodies, and other drugs. And even the word countermeasure is used in all of our pandemic response policy, countermeasures, the PREP Act and all the other things that happen. HHS uses the word countermeasure all the time. Countermeasure is a military term. It's a military term. So what we learned is this is a U.S. military operation. And to this day, the vaccines are not made by these companies. For instance, Moderna is essentially a marketing shield. Moderna's vaccines are made by a biodefense contractor called Resilience. It's got a big factory up in Mississauga, Ontario, Resilience. And under the emergency use authorization, Moderna has no rights to inspect the product or even see what's in it. The final fill and finish is done far away from Moderna. So Americans should know these vaccines have not undergone any safety inspections, none. So we don't know how much messenger RNA is in there, the quality and purity of the lipid nanoparticles, the complexes, and any screening for contaminants. None.
See, and I thought it was just a simple fascist coalition of big government, big pharma, big tech, you know, to make billions of dollars. But it's a lot more insidious than that. This is actually a military operation using us as the guinea pigs. But this is worldwide, though. So who's benefiting?
It's worldwide, and it's interesting, and the vaccines don't seem to matter. You know, worldwide, I think one of the most frequently used vaccines are the killed vaccines, the Sinovac, CoronaVac vaccine. Very interesting. China's got a library now of like 12 vaccines. China's become an incubator for new variants because they're just using so many vaccines. China, the CCP claims to have administered 3 billion doses of vaccines. They only have 1.3 billion people. So they have heavily vaccinated, probably mainly with the killed virus vaccine, which is known to promote variants. And that's been known. South America has extensively used the Chinese vaccine. Even in the United States, I've always found it curious. We have 4 vaccines on the market. There must be a winner. There must be a loser. There must be 2 in between. How come no one, any school, any employer or government agency, how come no one cares which one's the best? Why do they just say, take a vaccine?
That's a great question.
If they really worked and people were really interested in their theoretical protection, why wouldn't there be this natural American competitive race to figure out which one's the best? How come Pfizer and Moderna don't seem to be too competitive with one another? How come Johnson & Johnson or Novavax, how come no one's actually competing to be the most effective or the safest? There seems to be no interest. There's no American competitive spirit whatsoever.
This is fascinating. This is all new to me. I'm so glad you're on. And no other company has decided to get into the vaccine business. It's like the market's closed.
It's interesting. You know, AstraZeneca withdrew in November of 2022. AstraZeneca said, we're out. That was the Oxford vaccine. They quietly withdrew everywhere. The AstraZeneca vaccine, by the way, is nearly identical to Johnson & Johnson, and they're made by the same company. They're made by Emergent BioSolutions outside Baltimore, again, a biodefense contractor. So I think people just ought to take a look at what these products are, understand that the pharma companies are essentially marketing shields. I think one of the reasons why there's no competition is these products are all pre-purchased. So the government buys them without any basis. They're not competitive products. In fact, the bivalent vaccines were purchased before the studies were even done. So the companies are just gravy. The companies are just skimming profit off. They farm out the production to the defense contractors who are already, you know, in place to begin with. And so the production goes. The vaccines are part of this bigger biopharmaceutical response. Don't forget the in vitro diagnostic manufacturers have made a killing, those making personal protective equipment. It's very similar to defense contractors where, you know, once they're in place, you've always heard about the, you know, the $30 hammer and stuff like this for these government contractors. It's the same thing. It's just fallen into this biodefense area now.
Well, that's
and
the model.
It's been brewing for a long time.
They're just following the model they know. This is fascinating. All right. Just in the interest of time, just because I know I could ask you a million questions, there's a couple of bills I want to introduce you to. I don't know how much you know about them already. I know you were sent them, but I know you're busy too, so you may not have a chance to go over them. Are you familiar at all with our vaccine manufacturer product liability bill?
Yes, I took a look at it.
What do you think?
You know, it's long overdue. What we know in 1986, when the idea of vaccine liability came in, it came in because of a term that's, I think, a disturbing term, and that it's unavoidable harms. There was a recognition that with vaccines widely applied, there was going to be unavoidable harms. Unavoidable. That's actually in the that word, you know, is in the documentation of this. That means that some people are going to be damaged by vaccines, and so because of that, there must be liability. And when there's liability, they just said, well, listen, there still would be compensation, but it's going to be paid by the U.S. government. And what's happened over time is $3.9 billion, with a B, dollars have been paid out for these unavoidable vaccine injuries. And people are getting really uncomfortable. You know, there's some states like in California now, children effectively can't go to school unless they take a vaccine and face this unavoidable harm. And people are getting very, very uncomfortable and nervous about this. Not everybody can take a vaccine. I mentioned I took them all, and I'm fine. I wasn't harmed. But not everybody can take them. And there's no opportunity for individualization. And there always must be individualization in medicine. Not everybody can take every pill.
Makes sense. Yeah, I am anti-vaccine. I've been that way since I heard about Gulf War syndrome and squalene and, you know, adjuvants and all these new words to me. It's like, wait a minute, you know. So, you know, I raised a daughter with absolute minimum except some of the classic vaccines, but otherwise, no. And she's fine. This bill, there's something I still think that Congress, they're going to be incapable of introducing this because they're so beholden to Big Pharma. You know, and the money for the FDA comes mostly from Big Pharma, and Big Tech has invested so heavily in pharmaceuticals, they're making their money from this too. And they're all working together to suppress information and force this out here. This has to come from us, from we the people. You know, our mission statement here is that we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. And so the whole point of this is to supply Congress and the state legislatures and local governments with new legislation from a new source, you know, us, the way the country was supposed to be run, so that the laws come from us to the government to regulate the special interests rather than the laws coming from the special interests bought, you know, by the special interests from government to regulate us. So this is an entire reversal of how everything's been done. This is my peaceful revolution. This is my business. And the more you can do, the more you want to do, the more involved you want to get. In fact, I've got an idea for a bill for you if you're interested in starting to write one, sort of reining in the medical boards and licensing boards that have so constricted doctors from what they're doing. So if you're interested in working on that, you know, let me know.
The Hero organization is the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS. They've been around since 1943, chartered in all the states, staunch advocates of independent medical decision-making, the Hippocratic Oath, doctors determining the community standard of care. That's the group to really partner with on this type of legislation. But I wholly agree. I think the other complicating factor here is when I was a kid and I was born, there were three shots defending against five diseases. Now there are a total of 72 shots over the course of 18 years defending against 16 diseases. And there's an enthusiasm for vaccines, I think, that has a psychology behind it. And the psychology is that there's this tacit belief system that the human immune system is inherently weak, that we need protection, and that mankind can do better than Mother Nature in terms of immunity. Mm-hmm. You know, the vast majority of reductions in diseases, from polio to various forms of dysentery and cholera, has actually been through sanitation. Of food and
chlorine.
Water supply.
Chlorine in the pool?
No. There's been a giant advance. And so so the idea is, now there's been some vaccines that I think honestly are compelling, like rubella, and essentially eliminating congenital rubella syndrome, which are like 20,000 disastrous cases a year in the United States. There are some that are compelling, but as we sit here today, there's an increasing movement to do, as you suggested, to go natural. And it was been fueled by some of the pioneering work of Paul Thomas. Paul's a pediatrician who studied this in his practice, where half his patients took all the vaccine schedule, like me, and half the others didn't, like you and your child. And you know what? The ones who did not take any vaccines had lower rates of asthma, atopic dermatitis, autoimmune conditions,
autism,
tympanostomy tubes, neuropsychiatric disorders. Yeah. So Thomas's paper, as a prospective comparative study, really opened our mind to, wait a minute, the vaccines, you know, despite their benefits, actually may be, on a population basis, causing disease. So the number of people now, there's a recent Kaiser family survey, it's out of my Substack, Courageous Discourse, the number of families now who are actively considering going natural is skyrocketing. And of those who have not taken the COVID-19 vaccine, the majority are considering for their children going completely natural.
Yeah. And just because I'm the anti-vaccine does not mean I'm anti-treatment. In fact, I'm actually pro-early treatment, you know, vitamins, minerals, and treating a disease. And speaking of the psychology again, the psychology is that only vaccines will work, as opposed to, you know, if someone gets COVID with early treatment, you know, in most cases, you can take care of it. you know, all the things you've talked about, Dr. Zelenko talked about, you know, all the other folks, Dr. Mikovits, we had this for 18 weeks, we had the world's greatest doctors panel. And we used to brainstorm for 3 hours. And Dr. Mikovits, Brian Artis was on, John Cullen, who created the COVID map for Johns Hopkins, he was on, Ben Marble, Jim Thorpe, all these incredible people were on. And I can send you the links if you're interested. But we talked about all this stuff. So the information was out there, but it was being so suppressed, and I'm still so suppressed here. But this idea that these folks had treatments that worked, and if the journalists reported and everybody and Congress looked at the results of the people that are still here who got ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and things like that, as opposed to the people that went through, and I'm not trying to make fun of this, but what I call the remdesivir ventilator death march, you know, where it was horrible what was happening to people. And yet it's better morally in this country to kill somebody in a hospital with a treatment that's known not to work than it is to save somebody with an inexpensive treatment that we know does work. It's like a moral flipping completely.
It was. And, you know, the timeline on this is I had one of the first FDA new drug applications to actually study this in March of 2020. The FLCC group led by Pierre Corey and Paul Merrick had the first inpatient protocol in March of 2020 at Eastern Virginia School of Medicine. I had the first peer-reviewed publication on how to treat COVID in the American Journal of Medicine in August of 2020, and that's still the most widely read, downloaded paper in all of outpatient COVID-19. And then the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons in October of 2020 had a full home treatment guide, telemedicine networks constructed, including Ben Marble's MyFreeDoctor.com. So I am telling you, within 6 months, practicing doctors like myself, we basically had the problem handled. We brought the message to the American people in November 19th of 2020. I was the lead presenter and witness in the U.S. Senate, and that's how historians are going to record this. So the two major approaches, if America would have adopted them, would have absolutely saved probably two-thirds of 10 million hospitalizations, would have saved two-thirds of a million lives lost, and would have basically preserved our economy, people's jobs, and their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The two things would have been the AAPS Home Treatment Guide instituted as a national standard of care and promoted by the government and assisted by the government, and the other one would be the Great Barrington Declaration, which came out in November of 2020, and that was written by Jay Bhattachar at Stanford, Martin Kaldor at Harvard, Sunita Gupta at Oxford, a million doctors, including myself, signed off on this. Yep. The Great Barrington Declaration said, do what Dr. McCullough is proposing, treat patients at high risk, protect those at high risk, and don't do anything else. No public masking, no hand sanitizers, no shutdowns, no lockdowns, none of that. If those two things, and people are going to go over this over and over again because the principles have been proven correct. Mm-hmm. Great Barrington and the treatment approaches, and I give great credit to Zelenko and FLCC and Didier Rialt and then the groups I worked with in Italy and the United States, that we came up with these treatment approaches. But it always takes 4 to 6 drugs, and it's not everybody. It's a group of high-risk individuals, and it's been done worldwide. Some of the biggest studies have come out of Iran, Asia. One of the things that should alarm Americans is that this is a worldwide problem. When was the last time we saw a news report on what's going on with COVID outside the United States and how they're treating? When was the last time we saw an update on a new innovation in COVID? 3 years into it, no presentation of innovations. The only thing Americans hear morning, noon, and night is take a vaccine, and it doesn't matter which one.
Yeah, it's staggering, the people that are not asking questions. Well, let me get back to the bill here for a second, just for folks that are new to this. Just to summarize really quickly, we get rid of the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program because that's going to be paid by Big Pharma through liability. We get rid of the Declaration of Emergency. We take the current law, and here's what I found fascinating about citizen legislation. The actual bills, the real problems with the bills are very clear, very obvious, and very easy to change. So if I go to, for those of you that like citations, 42 U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22-Standards of Responsibility, Section B1, It says no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with blah, 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 blah. All right, so that's it. So how do you fix that? This is no manufacturer shall be liable. When you go to my section, proposed law, and you go down to that same exact place, and it says, and I just changed just a few words. I said vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable in any civil action for damages arising from vaccine, the whole bit. That's how easy it is to change it. Instead of saying shall not, just say shall be fully. What, three
it's
words?
Brilliant, because all the other language has been vetted.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. But you're right.
Thank you.
Product liability is just part of American life. There's product liability on your toaster oven and your pressure cooker and your car and all the other drugs.
Yeah, your
that
donut
we
shop.
Use.
You know, your car mechanic. You know, everybody has product
there's,
liability.
There's always a product liability. These manufacturers, it's well known, have raked in billions and billions of dollars. U.S. taxpayers shouldn't be paying the freight for this. As soon as we had product liability, I'll tell you what would happen.
Okay.
Immediately the companies would start to retire certain vaccines and say, you know what, this isn't a problem anymore. We really don't need to do this. Pertussis and diphtheria are very easily treated with a Z-Pak. And we don't have a problem with tetanus infections since we have good wound care in the United States. And you'd start to see them retire the vaccines and limit their liability. And then the other thing you start to see is you start to see risk stratification and more focused protection. So for an example, the rubella vaccine, which I mentioned is really good, it only applies to women of childbearing potential. So you'd say, well, the recommendations now are just for girls as they enter the pubertal years to take a vaccine if their parents want to do that. But, you know, there's no reason for boys to take a rubella vaccine because rubella doesn't really have any impact. It's no different than any other cold. And you start to see a reduction in the vaccine burden, which I think would be a very welcome thing.
Fascinating. What would you like to do with this, and how can I help you? Where do you want to take this bill? Can you introduce it to the public? Can you bring it to the next interview? Can you testify on this in Congress? Can you take it to Senator Johnson, who seems to be the most active? What do you got in mind, and how can I help you do it?
It clearly needs to happen, but you know the space is so crowded right now. The job number one in terms of talking point is to get the COVID-19 vaccines off the market.
Okay.
So you know, I officially concluded the U.S. Senate session on December 7th, 2022, with that specific call. Mm-hmm. It's like, get them off the market. Within 48 hours in the U.K. Parliament, the same thing happened. The Australian Parliament. It's very important. A call for market removal is a very, very strong statement. And it's not something we go back and debate. Oh, let's debate the data now. It's like, no, the decision has been made. Get them off the market. People have come on my Twitter account, oh, I want to debate you now. It's like, oh, you do? It's too late. We've had 3 years of this.
The evidence is already out there. Yeah.
But you said something important that needs to happen, coincident to that, is we need to end these emergency declarations. There are two. We're under two, by the way, and they come from the White House, the National Emergency, and then HHS, the Public Health Emergency. But we're under SARS-CoV-2 and monkeypox emergencies. Neither one exists right now. Yeah.
Wow.
Neither one exists. We absolutely positively have to end these emergencies. And I agree, when we get into normal sessions now, this needs to happen as a parallel is to remove the liability. What's going to happen in the COVID-19 vaccine debacle, I can tell you what's going to happen, is that there's going to be enormous vaccine hesitancy. There's going to be a huge pro-choice movement that people would choose whether or not they want to receive.
Interesting choice of words.
And then, and then this liability shield is going to fall.
Yeah.
And I predict all of those is going to happen. And so for those who were dreaming of worldwide vaccination, they could not have hurt the vaccine cause more than standing behind these COVID-19 vaccines.
Yeah. See, my thought was that there'd be an immediate recall of all the gene jabs, and that they would say we're not liable for anything that happened before the law passed. That's what I think they're going to do.
Okay. That's good thinking. Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah. It is reliable. We're going to take them off the market. Now it would be a voluntary recall. That's actually a brilliant thought. So that's another way of doing it. If the liability comes in soon, then as soon as they see that, then it could push for a voluntary recall.
Well,
but
even just talking about this. Yeah, but even just talking about this, if it's in the national debate and pollsters start polling and news reporters start reporting that there's a vaccine bill out there, Congress can't run from this. Because if they say, they're saying that, well, we need years of study and, you know, millions of dollars in new agencies, just like they do with big tech regulation. I fix big tech in four lines of law. I'll get to that in just a second, then I'll take it. We've got a couple of callers that are anxious to talk to you. But the solutions are so deceptively simple.
We have to get a call. I have a TV show at the top of the hour, so.
Okay, let's get right to this then.
Yeah.
People can read the vaccine bill. It's at writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. So did you get a chance to check out our big tech eliminating censorship bill?
No, I didn't, but why don't you summarize it real quick?
Okay. What it does is right now Congress gave – in fact, Congress is the problem here. They gave the ability of big tech to do anything they want, where it says here in Section 232A, any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider, that's big tech, or user, that's us, considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or, and here are the keywords, otherwise objectionable. Whether or not such material is constitutionally protected, so they not only they allow them to do anything they want, they throw out the First Amendment. They can do that. So Congress gave the ability of big tech to censor anything they want. So my thought was, well, wait a minute, that's a law enforcement power, and we already have obscenity laws and pornography laws and child pornography laws. There's no reason for big tech to have this power at all. So my bill, very simply, it keeps the immunity for big tech for anything that we users post. So in other words, if you libel, slander, threaten, things like that, the user is responsible for that. Big tech has absolutely no liability there. Because they have no liability, the second part, and here's the key part, any contact, infringement, interaction, limitation, interference, or any other touching in any way, no matter how minuscule, by any provider of interactive computer services with any of the following, and that's any and all content posts, communications, you know, and touching of the search engine results beyond the raw number of hits. And that says, and then it said, shall void and revoke all civil liability immunity from that provider. So if they touch what you post, if they touch your account, if they touch the search engine results, then they lose the liability. It's just that simple, and they can be sued. That's the whole bill.
Yeah, that was pretty strong. One of the ways to think about it is all this internet and social media, they're common carriers. The Federal Trade Commission has common carrier things regarding, you know, a few basic things. And they're common carriers. They're not curators of information. And this idea of that they have curation. What's going to happen again in this whole COVID debacle is that is Google and internet search agents and all the other social media are going to say, listen, it wasn't us. FBI came into our offices and told us to do this. And it started happening actually before COVID. It happened in the last election cycle. So they're going to say, listen, this is a government operation. So, you know, what happened is these companies became state actors. So you know, the legal standard for a state actor is substantial encouragement. So clearly in the Twitter files, Twitter was substantially encouraged by the FBI and the CDC to censor me, as an example. They were clearly, you know, encouraged. Well, they're state actors. They actually now have taken away my rights, my right of free speech. So they have violated my First Amendment right. So they are now state actors. So what happens is Twitter, when the FBI came in, Twitter said, listen, you know, you're making me a state actor. I have to guarantee McCullough's right to free speech. I can't do that if I suspend his account. And so you can see now the liability chain's been expanded. And so I think you're going to see a ton of civil liberty litigation out of this. And I think all the agencies are going to pay dearly, and I think the social media companies are going to pay.
Well, see, this bill makes it easy, though, and I'm hoping to get the national trial lawyers, you know, in on this as well. And so if you make them, you know, give them immunity for things that other people do and put on social media and search engines, but open it up that if they touch anything, if they cross that line, then they can be sued for it, then I think that solves the problem. I don't know how much time you have left, but whatever you want to say in the next few minutes, you know, feel free. And anything you can do with this, you know, with these two bills, let me know, and I think that'll help. And again, you know, just shamelessly, I'll plug myself that I'd love to get the same message to maybe Tucker Carlson and maybe Joe Rogan and see if we can get people just copying the bill link, sending it to Congress, sending it to other media, and get this out there in the national debate, and let's see what happens.
I think it makes a lot of sense. People should be writing their own laws. This country is for the people and not for government. In fact, our laws are to protect the people from the government. And that comes way back to, you know, protecting that people wanted to be protected against British rule.
Yep.
And so that's what this is about. It's been inverted now. The government believes it's protecting the public and acting in the best interest of the public, and it's been a disaster. It's been happening worldwide, though. This is a worldwide operation. I keep going back to that. Something much bigger is at play right now.
Mm-hmm.
And John Leake, my co-author in my book, says we should always pay attention to public aspirational utterances. For example, Bill Gates has said, circa 2010, UK tabloids, that you can reduce the world's population through mass vaccination, and that would be a good thing. Klaus Schwab has said in his book, COVID-19 pandemic will be a limited window to establish a new world order.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we should take these are aspirational statements or public statements. We should take them seriously. I think there's something much bigger going on. And U.S. laws can help provide protections, what have you, but there's something very big going on in the world right now. And it is, at this point in time, very much focused on a needle in every arm. People think the next area of focus is going to be digital currency and digital passports and things of this nature, but it is focused on a needle in every arm, and it doesn't matter what product, which is very interesting. In many circumstances, it doesn't matter when it was taken. You know, to pass a lot of these borders, you just have to take a vaccine at any time. It could be 2 years ago and it's still good. Well, everybody knows theoretically they're only good for 6 months. Most employers don't even have a six-month check on this. They say, well, if you take it once a year, you're good. Now, even the CDC childhood vaccine schedule for the COVID vaccines is unclear on this. They don't say the kid has to keep getting a shot every 6 months. They say, well, just an annual shot. Well, it doesn't work annually. So you can tell something is distorted in the thinking. It's focused on vaccines. It doesn't sound good, doesn't smell good, and people are rejecting them.
We're leading resistance here. And so changing the laws so that we, the people, can actually, you know, like I say, write the laws we consent to be governed by. John, do you have time for a question, or do you just like to give your contact information? How much time do you have left?
Let me take two questions real quick.
All right, let's do it really fast. Let's get to Josie here, one of our longest reporter folks. She does a Latino report. Grew up under communism in Nicaragua, so she knows this kind of stuff. Dr. Peter McCullough, quick question.
Good morning. Good morning. Great show. Quick question. Are you going to be in Nashville with us this weekend?
Yes, I'll be there. See you soon.
Oh, in person or on the screen?
No, in person.
There we go.
Good. So I get to meet you. I'm going to tell you, Josie with Action Radio. And then we'll talk.
See you then. See you then. We'll do a quick spot.
Okay, muy bien.
Let me get one more quick caller. Pianki, let's get one quick question from you. Pianki, for Dr. McCullough.
Well, I'll say that Joseph McCullough wrote an article that appeared today in Epoch Times where he quoted you in your review on the football player Hamlin. But every other news source does not include that. Matter of fact, they dispel what Joseph McCullough says. And I'm saying this, is that news sources are not going to admit to the correlation between the pandemic, the vaccine, and these athletes fall dropping dead. What's
Good
going
point.
To have
Let's,
to happen is
look,
that the kickoff and the Super Bowl, after the whistle is blown, you look downfield and see about six or eight athletes laying on their back dying. That may be what kicks it over.
Yeah, let's get a response
well,
from Marcella.
Just
go ahead.
Respond to that. People have said this isn't about Damar Hamlin. Thankfully, he survived. And, you know, I told America he was going to survive. I was on Tucker Carlson within 24 hours. I was the only doctor who correctly made the call on the resuscitation and the whole, you know, the whole ordeal. As a doctor, when I have a patient who's had a cardiac arrest and they have no prior history of heart disease, in fact, these athletes have been screened for heart disease before they play, the first question I ask clinically is, did they take a COVID vaccine? That's the first question. Because the FDA says the vaccines cause heart damage. And in our cardiology guidelines, we cannot let them exercise if they have heart damage. A lot of them don't feel it. If they exercise, it triggers a cardiac arrest. So for that reason, we can never, ever rule out the vaccine. And we're now nearly 2 weeks into this, and the doctors haven't said a word. If they would have turned up a heart problem, they would have said it right away.
Yeah.
And the doctors looked so uncomfortable in that press conference. So until proven otherwise, Damaris Hamlin's cardiac arrest was due to COVID-19 vaccine-induced myocarditis. I've told America that. And what I'm saying is, I'm agreeing with what you're saying. This is going to be swept under the rug. You'll probably never hear about this young man again. And it's going to be the next one that becomes the discussion point. And unfortunately, it's going to happen because there's no safety measures put in place.
Hmm. Should we be screening airline pilots for blood clots and other potential problems?
Well, we should have screening programs. The NCAA, Big Ten, during COVID, and so did the military, they had very good screening programs. They screened for myocarditis. They didn't find much with COVID. But these screening programs existed. They involved blood testing and EKG and echo and MRI. So our military and our athletic leagues had the proper myocarditis screening program. But they just did it during the wrong phase of the pandemic. They did it during the infection where myocarditis doesn't come up very often. And they stopped doing it during the vaccination where our FDA says the vaccines cause myocarditis. So a paper was published by Daniels and colleagues in JAMA. They should take the Big Ten program, which is very good, and they should institute it across the college and the pros. We should be doing that right away. I think they should do it for airline pilots, workers that, you know, are in situations where they could impact the health and safety of others. And we should have a myocarditis screening program. It's been done. It was done in the Big 12. They could do it, published in one of the widely read journals. There's no reason why we can't do this.
Yeah. Do you have time for a question or do you have to go? One more?
I have to go, unfortunately.
Okay. Contact information, and then thank you so much. I really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you. Go to my website, petermccullohmd.com. That'll take you everywhere. Have a very popular Substack, Courageous Discourse, just published today on pregnancy and vaccination. Book, CourageToFaceCovid.com, and that's has over 1,000 five-star ratings on Amazon. A very popular book, true story, true crime story about the suppression of early treatment. And then go to I have a podcast. It's on radio this every weekend, twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday, McCullough Report, America Out Loud Talk Radio, McCullough Report. And then you'll see me in the news almost every week. I'm a frequent contributor on Fox, Newsmax, One American News. I've been on ABC, almost all the stations.
Perfect. And you have the Bills now to work with also. So thank you, sir. I'll be watching. I'll be joining Substack myself. Take care.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Wow. I'm going to take a break for a minute here, and then we've got Diane's on the line still with our election integrity report, and then we've got Josie for the next hour. She's calling in early. Bianchi's still here. We took it right up into the hour. We had about 3 minutes to go. He's got to get ready for his next interview. So let me take a little bit of a break right now. I'm back with our callers, and free-for-all for the rest of the show. Do you know your way around healthcare? Insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is GraithCare.com. That's GRAITHCare.com. You can email them at GraithCare.ADM@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. GraithCare, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street, in the historic district of Milton, Florida. right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Okay, we are back. I made the lines live. Diane's going to join us in the 9 o'clock hour. And we've got our two regulars, Josie and Pianchi, here. Let's start with Josie. That was an incredible interview and an amazing amount of information and some things that I learned that I have to start researching now. What do you think?
Great. It was a great show. I didn't want to interrupt. I said no to see him live in Nashville this weekend. We're going to be with a bunch of doctors and a lot of people.
Well, he'll know you now.
Mike Flynn.
He said he'd be there. So, yeah. So what you can do is, now he's already read the bills, but you can certainly talk about them. And now that he knows both bills, although there's probably, you know, more to think about with the product, with the big tech, but he knows the product liability bill. And that's the reason he came on the show. You know, because we're
good.
It. And I'll talk to him, you know, wait till he's done his other stuff. And I have, you know, my secret agent. They can chat and see if we can get, you know, contact with Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson. I want to do those shows, too. We start getting this into the national debate. We start getting this into the world debate. You know, this is a worldwide show. You know, it's kind of funny. We have a new sponsor, one of our local automotive stores. In fact, my mechanic, you know, is now a sponsor of Action Radio. And so it's great.
Heard.
Yeah, isn't that great? That's the Florida Stores of Milton.
I wish I would have known because I just had my oil change yesterday. Since we're traveling, you know, it really needed it.
Well, you'll need it again.
For my house. And they're over there by the bakery in Milton, right, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
okay,
so this show is going to be a mixture of national companies, international companies, and local companies, you know. And this is, I mean, I'm here in Milton, and I want to promote the company, the community. I'm just hoping the community, you know, we get more folks, you know, promoting us. And so that's where we're going. And then, of course, my book and Grave Care, and we'll have a couple of other commercials because we're affiliates with a bunch of different places. Pianchi, sir, thanks for joining us. What did you think?
Well... You know, he has a good point. And as I said, Epoch Times had an article, well, had an article that was produced by Mercola, and he mentioned the report made by Mercola on Hamel. But no other news stories are even covering. You can't find this article. It just put out today. You can't find it anyplace else. And that there is a big problem.
Well, he referred to the press conference. And did you see the press conference? Because I thought that my first thing was, hey, there's no press conference. What's going on? So they actually held a press conference? What happened?
No. Well, this apparently he done a review, and I posted it in Facebook.
Uh-huh.
And he made reference to that the heart was weakened by the vaccine, the muscles. I had a friend that died from that on Christmas Eve after he suffered a heart attack the previous Saturday.
Yeah.
So he was a former NFL football player, and he did take the jab.
I'm wondering if football players are more suspect of this. And Josie, we're going to get to your report in just a second. Josie's calling in because the show got canceled yesterday. Yeah. And we can talk about all this. I just want to get your theme in because it's fun. They can't talk about this, Bianchi. They can't get this back to the vaccine, the gene jab,
I agree with you. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
It's going to take a mass number of people, like I made mention, in the Super Bowl kickoff. Whistles blown, they look downfield and see four or five players laying on their backs, then maybe it will get the attention that it needs.
That's an interesting point. And Peter picked up on that. Peter Mercola picked up on that very quickly. He says, yeah, it's not the first one. It's the second one. And then the third one. And this is going to happen again. And I'm just wondering if football players, because of the explosive nature of plays, football is a weird game. They don't do a lot most of the time, but when they do, it's incredibly intense for however many seconds the play runs. But then you look at soccer players, which have, soccer and basketball, where the ball is going up and down the court or up and down the field. There's a lot of aerobics, and it seems like the most aerobic sports, the ones that need the greatest heart-lung capacity, you don't see ping pong players keeling over, at least it's not being reported, but you see, or golfers, it's football players because of the intense activity and the huge strain on the heart that these athletes have to have. So I think that's probably tied into it. And McCullough would know, he's a heart specialist. I mean, that's his field. Interesting. All right, let me play Josie's theme, we can continue this discussion.
Go
ahead,
Josie. You see all the soccer players dropping that? Nobody's talking about it.
Well, that's because we don't play soccer here in this country. Yeah, we don't play as much soccer. It's not as big a game here. If it were, that'd be different. Football, I think football is going to be the real kicker here. All right, let's get to our theme and then to Josie's report, which should have been yesterday, but we had a little bit of technical difficulties, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey. So again, we can talk about...
Buenos días.
Good morning. Buenos días.
Dobre usa.
I shouldn't cut you off when I do that. I just play your theme and then I like start talking. I'm sorry. Buenos días. Konnichiwa. Guten
Tag. Buenos días. Dobre usa for the people in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Well, my report yesterday was going to be talking about the vaccines, actually, and then I didn't know you had people this morning. I was like, wow, that's cool, but I didn't want to interrupt, like I said, calling. But more and more famous people are dropping dead, and now people are kind of like waking up, and I noticed the difference on the nursing staff from different places, different hospitals, different facilities in the area.
What's happening?
More about it. I had a nurse Saturday from a local hospital. He's been here for about 6 months from California, escaping the radical left communist state. Or I should say the people running the show, not the state, really. So he was saying that one of his patients, double vaccinated, double boosters, she got up to go to the bathroom in her room, you know, and then she collapsed. She hurt her head. She split her head open and blood everywhere, he was saying. And then when he came to pick her up, literally there was blood clots coming out of the cracks of the head that he's never seen in his life before.
Wow.
While we were talking, he was just almost in tears, this guy. And he points out and he goes, "They are murder. This hospital are murderers." And I was like, I was in shock for a nurse to be telling me that, because I just met him, you know. And so he knows a lot what's going on. And many of the students are being forced still to do the flu shot. That's the new thing. They really are like an army forcing them, or military. You know, just you got to get the vaccine, you know, the flu shot. And also that 9-year-old little boy that was paralyzed after getting the children's vaccine, the routine vaccine, he's still paralyzed, the girl was telling me. So I don't know what they did to that boy, but they probably gave him the COVID shot instead of the children's shot, you know, your routine shot. But it's sad what is happening, and we haven't stopped this killing. And it is time to stop. I don't know what is it going to take. I mean, you know.
Well, I know one thing is product liability. That's the first thing. In fact, McCall was talking. Remember when I talked about the total recall or voluntary recall and a statement that nothing, you know, that they're not liable for anything that happened before this act was passed. And on this, and he's like, oh, you know, so that kind of worked. But he made a point, too, that you just made as well, which is that the flu shot, he said it doesn't matter what goes into your arm. They just want, you know, stuff being jabbed into your arm. And that to me is fascinating. So I'm wondering if it doesn't matter what you call it, a flu shot, a COVID shot, that it still has the same stuff in it, still has the same bad stuff. It's like the universal, you know, drug gene therapy. And so that, you know, they're trying to remake people into whatever this thing is. We need to explore more about this bioweapons thing, that this was a government program, the DARPA. I mean, I've looked into it a bit, but I haven't. But there's more to this. There's a lot more to this. And this is quite fascinating that it is on a government model, a military model of, you know, what do you talk about? Counteractive agents and things like that. I have to listen to it because, you know, an interview like that, there's so much going on. And I'm concentrating on what I'm going to do. So now I get so that I can listen better, you know, when I hear it through. And anything you want to say to him, you know, he's going to get the podcast of the whole show. So I'll be sending that to
him this weekend. We got a lot of doctors, a lot of important people going to be with us, and I got VIP tickets, so we're going to be front row and we're going to meet them all. And if my husband's cousin comes in, we're not sure if he's going to be there. We're representing George Magazine with Anne, so she has passes for George Magazine, so I don't know if she got one for me or not. Representing
that's Anne Vandersteel.
She's going to be there too with us. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, she's running the new Zelenko Foundation. So I'm hoping is that I've sent her a bill that Dr. Zelenko wrote with me. You know, actually, I wrote with him.
Yes.
You know, he gave me all the information for it. But he told me where the problems were to reform the FDA. So we have a, you know, and I'm kind of surprised they haven't picked it up more, that there is a Dr. Zelenko Action Radio bill. You know, she's got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's had it. We wrote it back in August of 2020. You know, it's been around for a while.
I'm going to mention it to her about it. And I'm going to try to give Eric Trump the vaccine bill that you wrote. I'm going to send it to him.
That's the next step. So, the fact that we basically got an endorsement from Dr. Peter McCullough that our vaccine product liability is you know, necessary. The big tech bill, I don't think that's his area of expertise. So he didn't come out as strongly for that. But, you know, obviously he supports the free access to information because that was one of the biggest problems with COVID. So now let's see if we can get, take the next step and get the bigger audiences and get this into the public debate. More and more people start talking about vaccine product liability and big tech, you know, ending big tech censorship. and, you know, with Congress, and I'll make this point, mm-hmm. and then Jackie, if you want to join in too, feel free. The
yeah.
point that Congress has said, well, we have to study this. We have to spend millions of dollars. We need antitrust, and we need, you know, new regulations. I said, no, you don't. You need four lines of law change. That's it.
Yeah.
You just change four lines. And big tech.
And
yeah,
for now, and mm-hmm. for now, we don't have to study it. We need to stop this. That's
yeah.
the main thing. We need to stop this. And
mm-hmm.
then they can do the study. But we all know what's really going on. We're not stupid. They think we're stupid. They took us in at the beginning, but not anymore, because a lot of nurses, you know, it's amazing that a lot of black nurses did not take the vaccine and they bought the car. And a lot of teachers in the area, they took the first shot, but not the second, and they bought the car for the second one or fully for both shots. It's amazing. It's amazing. The people, they said, why should I take something that they're doing an experimental? I say, perfect. You did the right thing. Some of the nurses are in the emergency room, not far from me in the hospital. They did not take the shot. They said, I will not take an experimental shot. I don't even take the flu shot. And now what that hospital across my store, they have somebody standing right there when they're given the flu shot. Because before, when they send you to get the flu shot, they know so and so and so and so. And
mm-hmm.
they just act like if they give you the shot, that's what the RN from the emergency room was telling me, which he's a friend of ours. And they just shoot in the air and act like if you're getting the shot and they were not getting the flu shot. And he's never had a flu shot in 20 years or more, he said, like me. And
right.
Now what they're doing at this hospital by me is they make sure a person is watching you take the flu shot. It's sad.
They've got
it's
a medical
happening.
Gestapo
so,
agent? This is ridiculous.
I don't know. But you know,
some,
Greg,
some big,
you know
some big
how
Russian
they...
KGB person? You will take the shot. We said you take the shot, so you take the shot. There's no choice here. What are you talking
take
about? You
the
take
shot.
The shot.
No, take the shot.
Yeah.
But you know,
just
Greg,
say no.
How they're...
Nancy Reagan, just say no. Say yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Never. Now, you know how they're changing the remdesivir? They're still
mm-hmm.
giving it to you, but under a different name. And I believe...
What's the new name? What's the new name?
I forgot.
you know I was going to ask.
I'll look it up
okay.
in a second. I'll look it up.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't know. My mind is... It's too early, Greg, okay? No, I'm just kidding. I've been up
yeah.
this early waiting for your show to start. So I believe probably what they're doing is they're doing it with a flu shot, because a lot of people now are saying no to the vaccine, COVID vaccine. So
mm-hmm.
I believe now this is the thing, the flu shot. So Dr. Judy Mikovits said, do not take the flu shot or any shot ever,
mm-hmm.
ever. So, and I
well,
believe
it makes
really
sense from a psychological point of view that the flu shot's been out for, like you say, 20 years or, you know, or more. And so people are used to
mm-hmm.
it, you know, and there haven't been a huge amount of adverse effects. But what if they take all the bad stuff in the COVID jab, put it into the flu shot? You don't know that this year, every year they make a new flu shot and they try and guess what the flu strain
mm-hmm.
might be and try and, you know, make an immune, you know, formula that people can build up an immunity to it. I have my own natural immune system.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a chance to tell Peter McCullough this, but, you know, I was a tour guide for 8 years in San Francisco. I met everybody
mm-hmm.
from every country in the known world, pretty much. I mean, Antarctica, I think, was the only place that didn't somebody. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've met people from all over the world. You know, I've got an amazing immune system. So when COVID came around, yeah, I was out for a couple of days. Okay, so... You know, came back up, never got it again.
I think
it was fine.
You were the first one that got COVID and didn't even know it. You know, Greg?
Yeah.
You were very
yeah.
sick.
Yeah.
Three, four
I remember
days.
Those shows.
Yeah.
I was begging for co-hosts.
Yeah.
Please host my show. You know, but I was still working full time. You know, so
yeah.
I'm working. But as soon as I took 2 days off, I took 2 days of rest, I was fine. Came back. Oh, my voice came back. My arrogance came back. My sarcasm came back.
Yeah.
I never did lose my taste and
yeah.
smell. But yeah, I was one of the first.
No.
Well, everybody was around here. We all got it. Christmas of 2019.
Yeah.
That's when it all hit us.
Well,
Bianchi?
I believe.
All right, go ahead, Jesse.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
All right, Bianchi. Bianchi, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
Well, COVID is nothing but a big scam. But
mm-hmm.
you know, the thing that I don't understand is how in the heck does the federal government relieve a manufacturer of product liability, whereas that product can kill people?
Well,
that's
money.
What I don't understand.
Big pharma bought it. They bought it from Congress in 1988. It's during the Reagan administration. So Reagan, you know, was pro business in the wrong way in this case. I mean, I'm pro business. I'm just not pro stupidity. You know, if your local, you know, car mechanic and donut shop has product liability, why would you exempt Pfizer? I mean, that a multi-billion-dollar international, you know, corporation. Why would you exempt them and put liability on your local restaurant? That makes no sense. You know, but they got it because they bought it. They literally bought it from Congress and they bought it from the Reagan administration. And it says in law, this is the only industry I know that has no liability. Well, let's think about the airlines for a minute, because, you know, this is why I asked that question about the airlines. Should these pilots be screened for, you know, blood clots and things like that and myocarditis?
They should.
They should be screened. You know, but the airlines have liability. You know, Big Pharma doesn't have liability for the jab, but the airlines do. If we lose an airliner, God forbid, don't happen. Don't, please. We don't want it to happen. But if it does happen and it turns out that both pilots were COVID jabbed, you know, they both became incapacitated. This is why I said anybody with flight experience should make it known to the cabin crew. By the way, I'm a pilot.
I was watching a video of the American Airlines pilot. He collapsed, heart attack, and died. And they were recording the whole thing and, you know, reporting for the co-pilot to take over.
Oh, yeah.
But
the Pentagon is considering giving back pay to those soldiers that wouldn't take it. They were, I guess you could say, fired.
I told people. Mm-hmm. I had a friend of mine point this out. I said, look, all those folks that are worried, and Jesse, you pointed this out too, all those folks that are worried about their jobs, your job is going to come back. They still need you. And if it's a government job, they're going to do just like when the government, you know, allegedly shuts down. Everybody gets back pay. They don't lose any money. So the same thing, the military people, they're not going to lose. They're going to come back. They're going to get their jobs back. They may want to retire, you know, because who, you know, but yeah, all that stuff's coming back. So the people that said, that thought they had to take the jab to keep their job and keep their pay coming in. No, we knew this was going to come around. It took a while. It took a couple of years, but yeah.
We were told last year that all the military that were let go or walk out of their job, that Donald Trump was going to make sure, which he's running the show. We know it now. They said that they were going to get back pay check. You know, and they were going to get their jobs. I was telling a lot of military last year, don't worry, walk out. I still have a friend in Japan. No, he's now in England, actually. He was in Japan. He's from Nigeria, from my church. And he came so close to getting the shots, and I begged him not to, back and forth, sending as many videos as possible, whistleblower military and all that. And he never got the vaccine. And then they threatened him that if he didn't get the vaccine, he cannot come home. So from Japan, he went to England. So he's waiting to return home now. I don't know how soon. But he didn't get the job. And you should see some of the messages to me thanking me so much, because now that he's seeing all this video and all these people dropping dead and everything, we saved his life. Praise the Lord for that, you know. Because many people did not listen. Mm-hmm.
But you know what? If you have a certain amount of common, if you think for yourself, and I think this is one of our biggest problems now, is that the education system breeds it out. You know, families aren't encouraging this. Like, I encourage my daughter to think for herself. I say, look, you want to challenge me on something? Feel free. Unless it was, you know, like, you know, dad's orders, you know, for safety. But other than that, you know, anything that we talk about, any political belief, anything, she was welcome to challenge me and did, and became a great debater. But people don't encourage their kids to debate, to think, to look at something and question it. The old hippie question authority. You know, I got to find another one of those bumper stickers and put it on my car. But you have to question authority. You have to question when someone says that the only way to deal with this problem is an experimental vaccine that's never been tried, that we don't know what's in it, that there's no liability for the producer. That just doesn't make sense. That's insane.
No, it doesn't.
Why would anybody do that?
Why would
Unless
you want to take
terrified.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know. And what's wrong with treatment? You know, it's like if I don't worry about getting the flu, and if I do get the flu, I'm going to get treatment.
Hey, Trigger Greg, soup. I had a lady walking in my store yesterday morning, fully masked, and I said, ma'am, you don't have to have a mask in my store if you don't like to. Oh, no, I have to protect myself. And I started talking a little bit about it, and she was a little bit open, and she still had her mask on. And
yeah.
I said, I can
tell her
some
doesn't work.
So you can. Yeah,
did,
I told
her. You told her
the
mask
yeah.
didn't work?
But
yeah.
Anyway,
what'd she say?
She went to the Yeah, I did. She went to the car and came back, and she said, is there any way you can share those videos with me? And she came without the mask. Proud of you. You got that mask off. And
good.
The day before that, I had a mom, the son, and the daughter, double mask on.
Double mask?
I was like, double mask. Oh, yeah. And the young man, he was very overweight. He was going to go to school of being a chef. I could hear the breathing. He couldn't hardly breathe. And I said, you guys are still wearing that mask? And they go, yeah, we have to protect ourselves from anybody with COVID. I said, but COVID is gone a long time ago. And you're hurting your lungs with that mask. Oh, no, we've been wearing that for a long time, and we're used to it, and we like it, and we want to protect ourselves. And they refused to take the mask off, and I just felt bad for the young girl and the it looked like 24-year-old young man, but very overweight, and I could hear his breathing. It's not good at all. Not good. And,
well, the mask has probably infected him. Those masks. Remember when they mm-hmm. that town hall article when they tested it, a bunch of parents took their kids' mask after 8 hours of wearing it, and they sent it to labs, and it came back with pneumonia, you know, all bacteria,
yeah.
germs, all that. It was like a petri dish because
yeah.
you have warm, moist air, breathe on,
yeah.
on a cotton surface all day. It's a breeding ground for every bacteria you can think of. Oh yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But again, common sense. Why would you put a piece of cloth over your kid's face 8 hours a day? That doesn't make sense. None of this made any sense. And yet people were doing it. Either they
you
were
know,
scared to death or they were conforming, you know, to whatever, for whatever reason. Go ahead, Bianchi. What do you think?
You really wanted to scare people. Show them a video of those mites, M-I-T-E-S, that's on the skin that you can't see.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you got a microscope.
Yeah.
And they bore down into your hair follicles, lay eggs, and then it's on.
Yeah, wonder why you're scratching your head? Because there's bugs up there.
Yeah. Well, that's why your hair stopped growing some places because of them.
Huh.
And if you kill them off, your hair start back growing again. But, you know, here's the
wow.
thing.
I'm
people
must be free
should
then.
Understand that
get a full head
viruses
of hair.
Can enter into your body through many ways.
Yep.
Your
mm-hmm.
ears, your eyes, your nose, and, of course, through your mouth. My grandson was supposed to take a swab, and I gave him, I told him to take a Q-tip, spray Lysol on it, and clean out your nose. And he done it, and everything came back negative.
Well, that's what Dr. McCullough said. He talked about this being a nasal infection. It's an aerosol. And one thing that I didn't get to bring up, but that I got from his video, was that he made a big point, you know, we assess it fine before the Senate, that there's no such thing as asymptomatic transfer. In other words, you know, this is one of the big lies of COVID, is that you can get COVID from somebody that doesn't have COVID or doesn't have any symptoms of COVID. And that's nonsense. And we said it back then, 2 years ago, and I'll say it again today, that COVID comes from an aerosol infection, as Dr. McCullough said, from somebody that has COVID with symptoms, you know, coughing, sneezing, you know, obvious respiratory illness symptoms, to somebody who's susceptible. He also said that 94% of America's already had COVID. Well, if 94% of the countries are, that means 94% of the country's already immune to it. So why are you pushing a stupid jab for something that we're already immune to? That's just bad medicine. So it's fascinating what came out of that first
all
hour.
It was all planned and well organized years ago, Greg.
Oh, I know that. Well, see, now here are the questions I didn't get to ask. I didn't get to ask him if he thought that the vaccine came before the virus, which is my contention. I think they engineered the virus to the vaccine. I think the vaccine was out back in 2020, 12, 13, 15, something like that, and that they brought out COVID in 2020, SARS-2, you know, version 2, the update, you know, the upgrade, you know, the enhanced version. So I think that's how I didn't get to ask him about that. There's some other things. I didn't get to ask him about go ahead, comment on that, and then I'll get another one.
Like I said before, what came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, of course, the chicken, not the egg. And
mm-hmm.
The vaccine came first and then the virus. They well-organized the whole thing to panic people, to put
mm-hmm.
people in so much fear of their life. I remember getting videos that they said, oh, if you touch doorknobs, if you – it's in the air and stay inside and one of my girlfriends.
No,
he's freaking out.
He disproved that. He says in his video, go to his website. I've got it right here. Hang on. I'm going to pull it up right here. Peter McCullough
send
dot
it to me.
Whatever. What's that?
I should send it to me. I never have time to go. I'm always running. But,
PeterMcCulloughMD.com. Yeah. Here it is. PeterMcCulloughMD.com. Go to his website and or listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. That's why I always make sure to get contact information from these folks. But yeah, but you know, and the asymptomatic transfer, we didn't get a really chance to ask him about. I didn't get to ask him about the 2007 pandemic guidelines with the pandemic severity index. I'm the only one I think has ever talked about that, where they changed the guidelines in 2017. 3 months after, so everybody knows that the Dr. Fascist. I got that into. I don't know if you heard that, but yeah, we got the full definition.
Yeah, I did. I was laughing with my husband.
Yeah, I knew you were. Yeah, well, I had to make sure of that. Anyway, well, it's you know, for those that don't know, that's Dr. Fascist. In fact, you should practice this. You know, the genocidal, psychopathic, avaricious, narcissistic, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. That takes practice, folks. You just can't do that. You know, it's like Pianki's picture perfect face saving shaving cream. That one took practice
there you
too.
Go.
Anyway,
hey,
the point
Greg,
is
we're
going to
be
we're
going to have a huge team of doctors with us at the event this weekend.
Well, tell me about the event.
And I can
tell me what's going there. I'm curious about the Tennessee thing, since I'm not going.
Everybody, it's at a big church, but I think they sold so many tickets that they're going to have a huge tent outside. Nice,
like a revival.
Yeah. We're going to freeze. We're probably going to freeze to death because it's going to be, I don't know if it's going to be one day 30 and the other day 50.
Yeah.
Outside, not good. We're going to forget about the cold when we see all the famous people. I can hardly wait to see Dr. Marble from Gulf Breeze with a microphone on his hand. He's going to be with us.
He's
on fire.
We should... We should talk about Ben Marble. Ben Marble's a friend of mine, but he was on our World's Greatest Doctors panel, but he went a little crazy. He said a few things that I really couldn't.
But I agree with him. No. We need to arrest, put him in prison. A lot of these people are probably going to be, and I hate to say this as a Christian woman, a lot of these people are probably going to be hanged by the public.
Yeah, see, that's the part I didn't
want
to go. That's the level I didn't want to talk about. Yeah. Now, if we have,
have
due process executions, if there's a death penalty for what they did, that's different. But he was advocating a little stronger than that. And it's like, no. No, you can't.
That's
we can't
good
do that.
Enough, Greg, for all the millions
well,
of people dying because of them.
Do you want just vengeance? You know, here's the question you always have to ask yourself. Yeah, it feels good to you know, to take the life of someone you think has done horrible evil in the world. And you know, and I'm thinking if there's a death penalty for it, yeah. But I'm a big due process guy, a big constitutional rights guy, and we have constitutional rights not to protect.
Gringo. You think different.
I don't do it to protect the Holocaust, you know, causers. I do it to protect the honest people from being executed, you know, unjustly you don't do this for innocent people. That's why we have these protections. So I'm not going to go there on the show. You know, he went a little far.
That's okay.
But I have amazing.
But anyway,
just to clarify,
so
I have amazing respect for Ben Marble.
Have
yeah,
the
I do.
For 15
yeah.
minutes, and Penning, so many doctors will have it for half an hour. Eric Trump is half an hour. So a lot of people, they have too many. I think they have too many people. A lot of people are only getting 15 minutes to be up front.
Well, let me ask you this. How many of them have an action plan? Like, you know, maybe not like we do, because I think we have the best action plan. The two bills, vaccine product liability and ending big tech censorship, I think are the two things that would change this entire debate overnight once they get out in the public. But does anybody else have an action plan?
I know.
What are they talking about? Are they asking people to do anything in terms of fighting back?
That I know of, only you are trying to get some action done through action.
See, that's the problem.
Radio.
It shouldn't be just me or you or Pinky or Diane, who's going to be on in a little bit, or any of our reporters. It shouldn't be just, or Wendy. You know, it shouldn't be just us. It should not. There's no reason for this. You know, fortunately, now that I'm, in touch with Dr. McCullough, you know, we're going to start exchanging information and doing some stuff. So this is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge development
yes.
for us. And even if he's not the biggest proponent of a legislation, what he does promote, what he knows of heart medicine and viruses and things like that. You know, he does what he does best. We do what we do best, and let's work together. You know, so he doesn't have to know everything about the legislation, as I don't have to know everything that he knows about hearts. I never will. You know, I mean, he's in a different league. But mm-hmm. that's how we can work together from our different specialties. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. What I would like to see is all these doctors, that they all have a show, they all come on, and I love mm-hmm. a lot of them. I
yeah.
want them to go to D.C., get on the steps of the Capitol or the courthouse mm-hmm. or wherever they want to stand, and
yeah.
they need to stop this killing. And nobody's doing that, and I'm tired of seeing all these reports, and they know everything. They know exactly what's happening because
yeah.
they've been censored. Videos taken down. The first time the online doctors came on, Dr. Simone Gold is going to be with us too, actually.
She's an attorney. You need to talk to her because she's an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
She'd understand these bills perfectly. So if we can get her on the show
mm-hmm.
or just talk to her in
person.
She
might be the perfect one for me to give her the bill.
Yeah, I would think.
Eric,
yeah.
You know?
Because, well, no, you
mm-hmm.
want to give him to, no, here's why you want to give him to Eric Trump, because I want to connect us to the Trump campaign, and I want to have them,
mm-hmm.
you know, look at and consider for their campaign our citizen legislation. If Trump campaigns on vaccine product liability, okay, that's going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Congress
yeah.
is going to feel enormous pressure, you know, to do something about it. And they're going to do it with our bill.
Mm-hmm.
If Trump, so you have to talk to Eric Trump, and you have to talk to everybody. You know, I'm sorry, I'm selfish, but I want to talk to Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan, and I mean that Dr. McCullough can you know at least introduce me to them, because they're much more in the realm of legislation and action. And so
I never watched that show. I don't
okay.
watch Rogan.
Okay, well, right, but millions of people. Okay, you know. So even if they just tell their folks, you know, here's the bill, you know, link, send it to the other media, send it to Congress. I mean, it couldn't be more simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, I went over
both
bills last night, made a couple little changes, a couple little tinkering things. Oh, and listen, I love what you do. You know, you do what you do best.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Yeah. But Eric Trump is critical. Dr. Simone Gold is critical. Dr. Peter McCullough, now that you know him, now that you're buds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all these
people.
I'll
get to see him over there.
Yeah.
And I'll get to see Mike Flynn, and I'm going to ask him about
he's critical
coming
too.
On the show.
He would love what
yeah.
we do. See,
so
that's the
we'll
thing, too.
We'll see what
the,
happens. We'll,
the people
we'll
that really love, you know, the people that really love what we do would be like the Michael Jenelson, the Rogans, the Tucker Carlsons, those kind of folks would just, cause, and look at Tucker Carlson. He could report on this for months. I mean, you know, he get different guests. He could ask all his guests, what do you think about this? You know, bring on the pollsters. What do you think about vaccine product liability? Well, we can't do it in Congress, expensive. Well, I got this bill here that does it in, you know,
mm-hmm.
four lines. You know, why can't you do this?
Yeah.
You know, this is where it gets fun. This is my vision, right? This is where I see this happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Agree. But,
okay.
It's that's what I want to see. I want some action. I want people to be able to get all this information, what's in the vaccines, because when they open the paperwork that comes in the little box of the vaccines, it's blank.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing
yeah.
is inside. No information or nothing. And you know, you cannot go to the pharmacy because they give you a long I don't know how many pages sometimes for one stinking little medicine.
Yep.
All
the
side effects and everything that product has in the vaccine is like a mystery, because they well organized the whole thing. And they're still investigating that they believe it came from Ukraine because it's more central, you know. So I don't know.
Yep. Yeah. Well, he
point,
says it's worldwide. And
this
is a worldwide military operation. I think that's fascinating. Let me go back to the bill for a second. And this is, I want to put this on the podcast
because mm-hmm.
I'll be
yeah.
sending this to Dr. McCullough after the show. After I put the show notes in, but there's another thing that I talk about in here. This is provision in current law, which remember you saw the, if you watched the hearings with Senator Johnson,
and
Dr. McCullough was there, and everybody else, but there's a woman there, and I forgot who she was,
mm-hmm.
but she pulled up one of the inserts and it was blank, right? And so,
mm-hmm.
so here's what I'm saying. So if we go back to our favorite law, 42 U.S. Code Section 300AA-22- Standards of Responsibility, Part B2. Says for the purposes of paragraph 1, a vaccine shall be presumed to be accompanied by proper directions and warnings. Well, when in law is something presumed? That doesn't mean you have to do it. It just means they're presuming. That's bogus, right? So paragraph one is no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in civil action for damages, yada, yada, yada. Okay. So the first provision says that they're not liable. And the second provision says, well, it shall be presumed that there's an insert that'll tell you the dangers, but it doesn't mean they have to do it. You know, it's like if you said to a car manufacturer, we're going to presume that seatbelts are in the car. Does that mean they have to do it? No. So let's get to my law, which covers that, which instead of saying shall be presumed, it says, you know, B2, for the purposes of paragraph one, a vaccine shall be accompanied by proper directions and warnings known as an insert, which shall be provided in hard copy to every person before the administration of any vaccine, mRNA genetic modification shot, or any medical products designed to boost the immune system against a particular virus, bacteria, germ, or other disease. In sufficient time beforehand to allow for the slow and careful reading of the entire insert. Before receiving any vaccine or other medical product, as mentioned in this paragraph, shall sign a permission slip where they and the medical provider of the vaccine retain a copy that they have read and understood all the warnings and disclaimers in the insert and then consent to the vaccine procedure. That's how I handle inserts.
Mm.
You like that language? Mm. That's in the bill.
Yeah.
And the section above that, vaccine manufacturers shall be fully liable in any civil action for damages arising from a vaccine or vaccine-related side effect or other compensational event resulting from or a defect of their participation in the manufacturer testing, evaluation, certification, authorization, approval, distribution, administration, use, storage, transportation, or other responsibility of the manufacturer relating to their vaccines.
Mm.
Pretty inclusive, huh?
Yep. Well, they
should
be liable, but the plan was not to be approved by the FDA, so they don't get sued. See, they had it all well organized, the whole thing.
Yeah, well, we're pretty organized
here,
too. Yeah, well, that's why I said the guidelines were changed. The pandemic guidelines were changed. Everything was changed. There's two more parts I wanted to talk to McCullough about that I want to sort of put on the podcast here, too, that are in our vaccine bill. There's two preemption clauses. Okay, and that to no federal agency, department, or court may establish or enforce any law, regulation, declaration, including emergencies, mandates, or policy, which prohibits, restricts, discourages, threatens, burdens, or creates a chilling effect upon an individual from bringing a civil action against a vaccine manufacturer. So in other words, the federal government is prevented from making it more difficult for you to bring a lawsuit, because they're going to do that, right? They'll pass regulations. Well, you can't bring a lawsuit unless you have standing, all this other crap. So I have a preemption clause in the federal, and I also have a preemption clause for the states. Now, whether the states are going to enforce that, we'll see. But it says no state may establish or enforce a law, regulation, declaration, including emergencies, mandate, or policy, which prohibits an individual from bringing a civil action against a vaccine manufacturer for damages. So I've got a couple of preemption clauses in there, too. I'm pretty thorough about this stuff. So that's the bill. And it's endorsed by Vladimir Zelenko, Judy Mikovits, Jerome Bell, Deborah Viglione, Brian Artis, and that's it so far. Guess who's on the show tomorrow of that group?
Judy?
No, Jerome Bell. Freshman's run for
really?
Congress. Yeah. He's on tomorrow. And Robert Spencer, Jihad Watch, is on Friday. I get a busy week, and I get another guest Monday.
Good.
We're happening. Yeah.
We're going to be with Judy Mikovits, and she's going to be there too with us. So I finally get to meet her, because the few times that I tried, she either canceled or just on the screen. And that's why I asked him, are you going to be live? You know, Dr. Peter.
Yeah, I know that. He said he was going to be there. I think he was like, why is she asking me again? That was pretty funny, actually. Well, say hi to Judy for me, because I haven't met her yet.
No, being there means that he could be in the screen. You know how they put it on the big screen?
Well, he was on the screen at our Pensacola rally. You know, I know that too. But anyway, so say hi to Judy for me. And so now there's only two people that are presenting our information. Well, this is something you might want to tell first names as well here. So tell Peter McCullough if you get a chance. Or Judy will tell. I'll ask Judy to talk to him, because Judy actually has a PowerPoint presenting our bills. And hopefully she'll make that presentation, you know, in this Tennessee convention or event or gap. The other one is Brian Artis, who also talks to a bunch of people. Now, I haven't talked to him for a while. I got to get back with him and see who he's talked to and what the results are. But if we can get Peter McCullough joining those two, you know, Judy, Peter, and Brian start talking about vaccine product liability legislation, then we got three sources. And then we get another source. And then we get another source. And then it starts building.
Well,
then we get to bigger reports.
What was the name of that doctor that he was sharing the bills? That one of the doctors, was the doctor Thorpe? Or no?
Well, Jim Thorpe has
Jim
the bills.
Jim Thorpe?
Jim Thorpe has the bills. Yeah, he's got them. He's,
somebody was sharing them in different places. I don't know if it was him or the other doctor. I cannot think
the only,
of the other guy's name.
Yeah, the only two I know of are Brian Nardis and Judy Mikovits are the only two folks actively sharing our legislation right now. But he mentioned some of the doctors.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of notes. I got like two pages of notes from our chat here. So yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. You got more stuff? Anything on Ukraine?
No,
anything on Central America?
Report.
Anything on Brazil?
No, I haven't watched the news. I've been very busy and we're leaving tomorrow night. As soon as we shut the door, we're getting out. But of course I have help. The store is open. But we are the information center in our business. So, like, one of the hospitals cut me off because I was trying to rescue this young, beautiful girl not to take the vaccine, and she went to HR and complained that I was harassing her, so they cut the payroll. They don't want no one from the hospital to shop in my store. So I had one lady yesterday. She said, you know, I'm new there, and it's odd that they didn't put your name on the store. And I told her the situation because I don't care to tell it like it is.
Yep.
And she was like, what? And she just couldn't believe it because, you know, the payroll is their money that they're spending. It's not the hospital paying for their uniform. And so when all the truth and everything comes out, I'm going to write in my letter, says, so can I have my account back because I was right about the vaccine? You know, of course, they're probably not going to admit it. But I told
lady
in HR.
What would that come under? Restraint of trade or slander or libel? In other words, they're lying about you? You can actually sue them for,
that's sad.
You know, Interesting.
So I've been telling a lot of the workers so they work and get around. And there's a lot of faithful customers from that hospital that they're still shopping my store without the payroll, you know, because they want to shop in my store. And,
well, let's get your store. Get your store out there. Let's get the name of your store and where people can find you. So you might as well. You should do this every time you're on. Name your store so people can find it.
It's Ruth Uniform Shops on Olive Road, not far from Olive Baptist Church, my church, and across from Dirt Cheap. Come and visit us, and you can get some information about Action Radio. And I share it with people, and I give them the site. So you can find us there, and I'm every Tuesday at 8 now with Greg.
And I'm gonna
go get ready, Greg.
Okay.
I have to go earn my living, like Bill says.
Well, listen, thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to try and get Brianna for tomorrow. We'll get her report tomorrow. And tomorrow we have Jerome Bell, who is one of two people that ran for Congress on citizen-written legislation, the other being Calvin Wimdish. It's interesting. They're both veterans, both conservative black men. They've got a lot in common. They're both, you know, heroes of mine. They both served our country incredibly well, and they both ran for Congress, and they both got completely trounced by the rhinos by not giving them any money to run, and so they both lost.
Yep.
You know, it's an interesting story. I'm trying to get Calvin and Jerome together, but Jerome's going to be on with us tomorrow, and then Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch is going to be on Friday. So we're busy week. You know, so I get to forget today's show and get ready for tomorrow's, then I'll forget tomorrow's and get ready for Friday. So thanks, Jesse.
I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
God bless you. God bless you, Bianchi. Ciao. Thank you for all the videos you send me.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. So let's get Bianchi here, and then I'm going to take a little break, and then we'll get Diane's going to call us back. We'll get our election integrity and anything she wanted to say about my interview with Dr. Peter McCullough this morning. Bianchi, any thoughts on anything we've talked about today?
Well, it sounds like you got a plan.
Oh, I've always had a plan. It's whether I can implement it or not, but I always have a plan. There's nothing that, you know, there's a logic to, it may not seem so if you see the pieces, but there is a logic to where the show goes and why I do what I do. Yeah, I have a definite plan. You know, the bigger the public figures, the more people we can involve in, the more shows, the more journalists, the more activists, you know, the better. The more this gets in the public debate, the more we'll see if it's going to work or not. I think it will, but it's going to require enough people to defeat the money coming out of the special interests. And that's going to be tough to do because they're already organized. They've already got their lawyers. They're all set to go. You know, they've got their lobbyists buying stuff. you know, and it's crazy. Oh, I had a funny thought this morning. I was just thinking of this. You know, if I were a lobbyist, you know, with a sense of humor, I'd put some ridiculous clause in one of these bills, just to see if Congress was actually reading anything or not. And I was thinking this morning, if you had, I don't know, purple polka dot underwear, you know, so if you had a clause in it that said Congress is required to wear purple polka dot underwear in Congress, you know, I just put that in a bill somewhere, right? And say, and it has to be worn on the outside so we can check, you know, just to see if anybody read the bill and if anybody noticed it. And then afterwards, when they passed the bill because they didn't read it, I say, what about the purple polka dot underwear clause? Do you realize that you passed a bill that says you have to wear this, you know, on the floor of the House in the Senate? I don't know why. That just amused me this morning. Obviously not you. The Yankees just us here.
No, that would be comical to see how they go over.
Well, I mean, it proved that they don't read anything, and that's the whole point. You know, in fact, it's worse than they don't write anything. It's bad enough that they don't write their own bills. It's even worse that they don't even read their bills. They just vote on stuff. They do what the party tells them to do. It's really crazy. Any revelations?
Well, you know, you got at least 30 Congress members that wasn't even born in the country, so. And they come from every place, even from like Somalia. So,
well, I don't mind if somebody's in Congress born outside the country. I was born outside the country. You know, being born outside the country is not the issue to me. The issue is whether you're a loyal, patriotic American who believes in our founding principles of individuality, individual rights, a limited government, a republic, and a constitution. And I don't care where you come from. As long as you have those common beliefs, we're good. At least I'm good. I'm good with that. But if you have something like Ilhan Omar.
Yeah, well, a lot of them don't have.
Well, see, that's the problem.
Some of them you can recognize. Some you can recognize don't have those beliefs, but it is what it is.
Well, it's interesting that certain people, like Ilhan Omar is the prime example of someone who probably violated immigration law, who not only should not be in Congress, she should be deported or at least jailed for whatever crime she committed. See, that's a different story. Okay, so they're immigrants and immigrants. You know, it's just like saying you can't lump people of one race together because, you know, you can't lump Idi Amin Dada, you know, with Martin Luther King, even though they're both black. You can't say that there's a common thread between them. You can't say there's a common thread between Mother Teresa and Adolf Hitler, even though they're both white. You know, so you can't say that immigrants are bad simply because, you know, they're from another country because they're immigrants and immigrants, legal and illegal. It's such a different world. This is why I hate groupthink. You know, grouping people into groups never works because there's so many differences within that group. You know, I don't have anything in common with Jeffrey Dahmer, for example, or Ted Bundy, you know, serial killers. You know, we're both men, you know, so does that mean we have something in common? No. Different world. Well, at least let me get your comment on this, though. The idea that the president has to be natural born, I absolutely agree with that. Not so much, because other members of Congress can outvote. But I would never want to have somebody in the presidency like Obama, you know, who was born outside the country, because when you're born outside the country, there's a different allegiance. As much as I am pro-American, you know, I still have my Canadian and my Australian background. That's always going to be there. Anyways, that's a strength, but I don't think that's a good thing if I were president. You want someone 100% American in the presidency. So I absolutely believe in that clause. What do you think?
Well, blood is thicker than water.
Well, that sounds good. Yeah, and patriotism is thicker than treason. I just made that up. All right, let me take a break, then we'll get to Diane. She's on the line. And so let's note the time now. And let's get her talking. I'm really curious to see what she thinks of the whole thing. Okay, what have I played here? Got a couple things to play for you guys, and I'll be right back. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elba Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. And we are back, 8:57 here, our final hour today on Action Radio. And I was just, Dr. McCullough is already in touch with me. He's tweeting out our bills already, just to let you know. He's not wasting any time at all. He says, send me more stuff. I'm like, sir, I'm on the air. I've still got an hour's worth of show to do. So, you know, we did a good thing this morning, folks. Let's bring in Diane Warner, who is our election integrity, medical freedom, and anything else we feel like reporting reporter. And your turn. What did you think? This is a very important day here.
Oh, wow. That's so exciting.
What's that?
He's already tweeting. I love that he's already sharing the bill. That is awesome. I was impressed.
Check his tweets. Yeah, go to Peter McCullough. Yeah. You know, on Twitter, at Peter McCullough, I think, or at Dr. McCullough. Yeah. So I just looked at it quickly. Go ahead.
I've been following him for 2 years probably, mm-hmm. and when I first heard him speak, I knew he was telling the truth. And I have seen him at both times at Wahoo Stadium, and just stunned by how bold he is to come out and talk about, you know, our Defense Department that is actively the one word that I didn't hear in all this was genocide. I was kind of waiting for that one to come out.
Well, I said medical holocaust. You know, we sort of came near it.
Yeah.
You know, and I talked about Dr. Fascist as the genocidal, psychopathic, aberrations, narcissistic, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher, in case you missed it the first time.
Yeah. I did not. But the one thing that I wanted, and I was hoping that I could actually get to talk to him, but I know he had run out of time, but if she gets to talk to him in Nashville, the one thing that I probably want to push through all of this is that if someone has told you that this vaccine was safe, you never need to listen to their advice again, ever. And I mean, it's so simple.
That's a good point.
Because they said it's safe. When they said it's safe, they have no long-term data. You cannot say anything is safe unless you have long-term data. And as a registered nurse of 42 years, this is just something that's just drilled into us, you know, from the very beginning, from nursing school. And, you know, we've never practiced on pregnant women and children ever. If you're going to go take an experimental drug, we tell you it's an experimental drug. And we're not going to vote 15-0 from the CDC to give an experimental shot to children that's never been even tested on a human before. So, you know, I get very, very excitable when I talk about this because we took an oath to do no harm.
You can get excitable. I want to hear it.
We took an oath to do no harm, you know, and I just see so many people harming. And there's the CDC, the AMA, that all of these agencies, if they've ever said that this shot, this bioweapon was safe, you need to never listen to anything else that they say, ever. And until we clean house, and that's where Action Radio was so important. We've got to, obviously nobody's taking these people out of practice. So what we have to do is we've got to change the laws. It seems like this is the only way that we can do it. And so I'm thrilled that he can share our news. And my bill, I'm coming up with my bill to, you know, for election integrity. If we have a selection instead of an election, we're just going to continue on with the same. So, and until we get rid of our election fraud, election treason is a better way to describe it.
Uh-huh.
But until we get rid of that, we will never have, it's just, we're going to continue with the same. It's going to keep getting worse and worse until we're China. So.
Yeah. And this is the thing I never anticipated. You know, of course you never know what happens. I started this back in 2014 with my first articles and ideas about, you know, combining a citizen legislature with a radio program. I never in my wildest dreams believed that a presidential election would be stolen, that there was such a thing as the deep state. I knew there was big government, but that it was so corrupt that you have a Marxist Democrat party and a gelding surrendering Republican party, and that they're perfectly content with having the election stolen and they don't care. As long as they get what they want, as long as they can maintain the power, you know.
We've had selection since Kennedy, I do believe.
Probably, and that makes sense. Go ahead.
Trump is the only one that actually broke through, I think, because Hillary didn't give enough money. She didn't pay him enough to give her enough
votes. This is the question. How did Trump get in? How did Ronald Reagan get in? Because obviously the deep state didn't want him in. So the two aberrations in the last, 50, 60 years have been Reagan and Trump. Everybody else has been an establishment politician.
I'm not sure. I don't trust Reagan either.
No, he was not my, I was not a big Reagan fan for the simple reason that he talked a good game, but he didn't actually follow through. If you look at the budgets that he signed, he was the one that signed vaccine liability immunity. It was Ronald Reagan.
Yep.
You know, so
I don't trust
that was stupid.
Well, they put an actor in. You know, you look at Zelensky, they put actors in.
Yeah, well, look at Schwarzenegger. But, yeah, we had Schwarzenegger. Yeah. The governor of California is a Terminator. Yeah. Yeah, I will tell you what to do. Make my day. Oh, wrong actor, but you know what I mean. But yeah, actors don't make good politicians. Although politicians generally make good actors. It's kind of funny. Yeah, I would put that on a bumper sticker someday. But
I think Obama was a really good actor.
Oh, supreme actor. He actually played an American citizen. You know, he did pretty well. He actually had a fraudulent birth certificate and became president. It's amazing. You know, what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But he's black, so it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, you have to take that into account. You know, you don't see a lot of white guys, you know, from South Africa. from South Africa, get my accent straight here. But yeah, but what I didn't realize was because this is so bad that, you know, as much as we thought we had some impact with the elections and now realizing how much the vote is stolen, it makes the citizen legislature even more important than ever. That if we can't elect the people to vote for the good laws, then we have to write the laws ourselves and kind of force them, you know, through lobbying and advocacy and votes and, good journalism and reporting and influence and all the other things. you know, this is, we have to become really good at advocating citizen legislation because it's critical. You know, and so we have to be stronger than.
He's going to start sharing the bills. Absolutely thrilled. He's already started to tweet out our bills.
Yeah, I want to get some now, but I got a show to do. As I told him, I said, look, I'll be with you right in a bit. And I'll send him the links to the vaccine bill, the big tech bill, you know, our main website here at Blog Talk and writeyourlaws.com. And say, go wild. I was worried about him. And I was worried. Say, what if he's going to do something? It's like he's already tweeting. So, you know.
Yeah,
a friend of mine in New England,
awesome.
Put it on Facebook. Yeah, that he's already tweeting out the bills. It doesn't get better than this. You know, this is a huge victory for citizen legislation, for freedom, for everything that we're all working for here. This is one of those magic days. You know, and we're starting to get more of them. You know, when Peter Navarro was on the show, you know, and I was able to introduce our bills directly to him. You know, I'm sure they somehow, if they haven't yet, they're going to, you know, get to Donald Trump. You know, and I know that Donald Trump between now and the 2024 election is going to endorse Action Radio. And I know that they'll be on some of these major shows, that things are going to happen that have never happened before in terms of our little peaceful revolution here with citizen legislation. This is a groundbreaking, and it's going to happen worldwide too. I've got, friends in Canada and Australia watching closely what's going on. And one in England. I need some more English connections. But the English-speaking world is watching this very closely. That's where the audience is growing, Canada, Australia, and England. And so that's what's happening. That's the next frontier, you know, so, and it's going to go from there to all the other countries, you know, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, all through Russia, China, the Muslim countries are going to be interesting. I don't know what's going to, probably Indonesia be the first, you know, but we got the Philippines, Japan, South Korea, we've got all of Asia to go through. And there's a big gap, you know, Northern Africa and all the way up through Mongolia, you know, Mongolia, Kazakhstan, you know, all the Uzbekistan, all the stands, you know, Afghanistan. There's like this big gap that doesn't listen to Action Radio, but most of the world does. You know, we have far more coverage in the world than we have than the countries that don't listen, which is kind of interesting. And here we are. So anything else? What's happening in we can get the medical freedom, and that's the big topic today. But election integrity, anything new coming out of Arizona? Anything new we should know?
Well, there's still more election. I still have more on our local area right now. And
okay, go for it. Tell me.
Right.
Tell me.
My group is really fired up about this. Ascension Sacred Heart in Pensacola is now putting, I've got a, and I'm posting it. I'm going to post it on my website. I think I might have even put it on the vaccine alert for Action Radio, but it's Sacred Heart is requiring masks again.
What?
So, yes, they are requiring masks. So,
what's your
everybody
website?
Everybody call them and tell
them. I
know
you had a website. What's your website?
No, not website. My on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to put it on the Action Radio Facebook site for vaccines, and
okay.
I can also put it on mine too. So
yeah,
they
group.
Hammer us every time we put that stuff up. Yeah.
So for those that
okay.
We do have an Action Radio vaccine project, but it is a private group. And the reason it's a private group is I have to be very careful who I let in there. And the reason I have to do that
exactly.
is because we had very
we
openly
hammered.
The public.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. No, let me just tell you. I don't even know if you know this, but we had the Dr. Zelenko Action Radio Coronavirus Clearinghouse. We broke the story of ivermectin months before everybody else. You know, Dr. Zelenko was talking directly to people in that Facebook group, you know, offering advice and all kinds of things. That was a very special group. It was our fastest growing group. It was our biggest group. It was going gangbusters until Facebook said, oh, they're doing good work there. Let's disable it. And they disabled it. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well,
keep fighting.
What I've been doing on Facebook is I just put the link into the comments, and it's kind of saving me from getting censored as much. I put a little blurb in the top of it. So. If anybody wants
good
to
plan.
Get into Action Radio Election Integrity Project, I'll put that link. But please call Sacred Heart and say, stop this nonsense. And it's supposed to, they said masks are currently required due to high COVID rates. And I had a friend of mine, he looked it up and it said that they were not high now. So it's all a lot.
Wait a minute. McCullough
like
just said.
They want to post this on the door. So.
Dr. McCullough just said 94%
exactly.
of Americans already had COVID and gotten over it.
Yes. So,
and I'm sure the other 6% have been exposed. So we've all had
hammer these people. Let's really let them have it. I mean, go talk to them. Go tell them that this is ridiculous and, you know, to knock it off. And it's like it's all about money because it all boils down to they want to keep the money coming from the – and I don't even know that there's any money left in the COVID funds, but
they'll borrow more. Don't forget the debt ceiling is up this week too. I'll talk to Jerome Bell about that, and is running for Congress in the debt ceiling. Well, Sacred Heart though, that's a national company. That's not just around here, right? They're national.
It says Ascension Sacred Heart Pensacola Studo Family and Children's Hospital. Masks required, and this is somebody took a picture of it on the door, walking into the hospital. I have had a couple of people that walked in and nobody stopped them. Nobody made them, so I don't think they're actively trying to force it, but they could at any time. And I do know I have a friend that just his wife just had eye surgery, and they made her wear it as a patient. And I'm not sure where they had it done. I didn't ask where they had it done. But so there's still people in our community that are forcing these masks. It's ridiculous. I mean, listen to our governor. He said no more. And he just came out. I just saw a proclamation from him saying that he's not going to put up with any of the passport mandates, and he's not going to put up with any more of the mandates on masking. That just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
So I'm thrilled with that. Also, I've been talking back with a person that I have been communicating with since last May, and his name is Josh Yoder. He's with the the Freedom Flyers are he was a pilot with I'm not sure which airline, but he didn't want to take the COVID shot, and so he created a group, and they're suing the government. And but there was a and I kind of
are they still flying?
Because I saw
is he still flying with the airline
that?
Okay, we'll ask the question. He may not want to disclose his airline, so let's not give personal stuff until we know how much he wants to disclose.
Exactly.
Yeah, just in case. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
He wants to come on. He's going to come on the show in 2 weeks. He said.
Good.
So, I asked him about there was a posting that said that the people from Davos were hiring that had contacted his group of Freedom Flyers because they wanted unvaccinated pilots to fly all these people to Davos. And I asked him if that was true, and he said it was absolutely false.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't like that story from
really
the beginning because it just sounds like a setup story.
But I wanted to get the truth from the horse's mouth, and I was like, I went right to Josh, and I'm like, is this true? And he said, absolutely not. And I said, can I share that? And he said, please do. So, I asked him, or he actually did share with me that a lot of companies, though, have spoken with that want to have unvaccinated pilots fly them in different places in the U.S. So that's good for them. And it is becoming quite scary. When my husband and I got onto a plane, we almost only flown one time. We used to fly all the time. And when we got onto a plane to go to a wedding in Arizona, I told every single one of the flight attendants when I got on, I'm like, he was a pilot in the Navy. If you need help, come get
I was just going to say that you know, I haven't flown because, you know, I need my travel budget, but I haven't, but I'm hoping to get an invitation to like the Tennessee things and some of these other events because I don't want to just go and just, you know, in the crowd. I want to actually teach workshops or give a speech or something, but ideally I would teach a legislative workshop on how to do what we do here. So that's what I need to do. But that's my first thought is, you know, when I go on the, you know, by the cabin crew, is, by the way, I used to be a flight instructor, you know, I can still do it. You know, I can push an autopilot button.
Yeah.
You know, these things. See, the thing is, the airliners now, they can land themselves pretty much. You know, there's not a lot that has to be done. And you know that they would, if they had two pilots incapacitated, they would clear the entire airport of every airplane. They'd all go into holding pattern. They'd go sit up there for a while and say, okay, let's let the newbie land. Then you all can come back in. You know, but you can set up, and I would want to hand fly myself just because that was the job I wanted, was to be an airline pilot. And so, you know, many things didn't work out over many different times. It's kind of a crazy story. But the point is that I would think nothing of hopping into the left seat of a 737 and flying it. Wouldn't hesitate for a second. You know, throw on the headset and call up air traffic control and say, hey, you know, who wants to teach me how to fly a 737? That'd be the call. Like, huh?
Well, at least you'd have some idea of what to do. You know,
I know exactly
other than
what
the
to do.
Passengers in the back, I have no idea.
They I wouldn't know the numbers, and I wouldn't know the pitch angles exactly. But I could fly a 737 right now, and I've never done it. I've never flown a jet. But the principles are the same. See, this is the weird thing, though. All the flight controls on airplanes are the same. You know, they all have a stick, and they all have rudders, and they all have, or, you know, you've got ailerons, you know, elevators, and the rudder. Every airplane has that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard to figure out. Jets don't need much of a rudder because they don't have propellers. But I'll explain that someday too. You know, but anyway, but it's not that hard to fly these things, and especially they even have auto land. You know, you can get a certain altitude, put on the glide slope, you know, dial up the right instruments, the right approach frequencies, you know, plug in all the nav stuff, and hit the auto land button, and it's going to land itself.
Well, we may need auto land. We've got all these pilots that are vaccinated. You know, that's scariest time to me is when they're landing, is if they have a heart attack right when they're landing, that the co-pilot wouldn't have enough time to take control and save them.
Well, no, see, now the co-pilots and the pilots, they alternate. Yeah, they you know, if the pilot takes off, generally the first officer lands, or maybe however they do it, but they always share the duties. So you never know who's flying the airplane.
Yeah.
So you always have one pilot doing the actual flying and not really worrying about anything else, and the other pilot does all the radios, you know, all the navigation setups, all watches for other traffic, does everything else. So when you have a single pilot operation, this is why single pilot operations are riskier. You know, private pilots, especially who don't have a lot of training, they have to do the radios and the navs, and they have to fly the airplane, and they have to watch our other traffic, and they have to listen to the kid in the back saying, are we there yet? You know, it's a very distracting environment.
Yeah.
And this is when problems happen.
Yeah.
But I train people for that. Huh.
That
yeah, don't get me started on airplanes. I have way too much fun. Because, you know, I want Action Radio 1, you know, our official jet.
Oh, that would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
We could fly us to all these different events.
Well, I want two. Now that I think about it, I really need two. I need one for sport, one for fun, my fully aerobatic jet, and I need like a Learjet, like a maybe a six-passenger Learjet, you know, so that I can bring, you know, all of us, you know, different places. And that one will be flying high and fast. Excuse me. And I have to learn to fly that one, too. So I need a Learjet rating, and I need a Viper jet rating. And then I'm good. You know, I'm ready. That's all I want. I don't even want a house.
I love you.
You know, maybe I want a couple of cars. I want a couple of jets. And I live in a beach cabin. I don't care. I don't even need furniture. Just give me the jets and the cars and I'm happy. Anyway, we do digress.
Yes. I just pulled up the bill from yesterday. Well, let me see what Governor DeSantis calls to permanently ban COVID-19 restrictions in Florida. The governor addresses mass passport schools at news conference. Mm-hmm. And January 17th. This was at noon. And it says that Governor Ron DeSantis on Tuesday introduced a package of proposals to permanently ban COVID-19-related restrictions from mask requirements to medical professionals' ability to disagree with restrictions in Florida. The governor was joined at a news conference at Panama City Beach by Representative Dr. Neil Dunn, Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis, and Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Lapato. Is it Lapato?
Latipo.
Now,
we're still trying to get him on the show, by the way. I'm in contact with someone contact with him, one of our secret agents. You know, that's what I call the people behind the scenes. So one of our secret agents is trying to get – he was scheduled to be on the show right before the midterms, like about 2 weeks ahead of time. And then, you know, something came up, as they say. And so I want to get him back. What I'll do – actually, now I can send to my person the interview this morning with Dr. Peter McCullough. You know, I mean, these interviews tend to snowball. And so, you know, people are, oh, you have Peter McCullough? Okay, that's great. Well, you know, come on the show. So it all this helps. You know, in fact, if anybody can check what he's tweeting out. What's he tweeting out now? It must have been a short TV appearance because we had him for an hour. And then he had to leave. They gave him, what, 5 minutes? Whatever TV show he got. Because he was tweeting like, you know, 10 minutes later. So, yeah.
Okay, under the heading. Permanent protections against the biomedical security state the governor proposed, and the first one is to permanently ban the COVID-19 mask requirement. The second one was permanently banning COVID-19 mask and vaccine requirements in all schools, permanently banning COVID-19 vaccine passports, and the fourth one was permanently banning employers from hiring or firing based on whether a worker has gotten an mRNA vaccine. What I don't see here is the liability for the hospitals and the doctors. There's not any other governor doing that.
But this is where we should be able to talk to the governor's office. This is why we need a contact in the governor's office. And I know someone who has a contact in the governor's office, but they're not sharing as of yet. But, you know, this is what we need, and this is the perfect opportunity. So just what you said, you know, we would add a clause to that. So let's add a liability clause. you know, for the hospitals.
Yeah.
They should be liable for forcing people to wear masks. We've never really explored this, but mask injury. You know, all these hospitals and all these job sites and all these places and all these public transit systems that required, you know, a mask that doesn't do anything for a population that was already exposed, and then 94% of the country's already had COVID. You know, there's liability.
But this cracks me up. This is mainstream media. This is clickorlando.com. The last sentence cracks me up. It goes on to talk a little bit more about COVID protections. The governor also proposed legislation to protect medical professionals from speaking out against medical and scientific topics they disagree with, while also protecting their religious views. The governor has long spoken out against COVID-19 protections, which are widely considered to be effective in protecting people from COVID-19. While he has supported vaccinating seniors and medical professionals with the COVID-19 vaccine, he has since become a big opponent of the vaccine, often citing alternative data regarding its effectiveness. Now, the last
alternative data.
Is a kicker.
You mean like data?
It says, exactly.
Alternative to what?
Well, the last
to the government propaganda?
The last sentence is the one that cracks me up. It says, the COVID-19 vaccine has been, and the next four words are in blue and bold, shown to be effective at preventing serious illness and death. That is a bald-faced lie.
Oh, exactly. So, yeah. That's like, do you remember the movie, the
that
had
the
candidate,
last word.
The original one?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. Let me see if I can find the quote here. In fact, this is
this like
is
they
a great
had to
film.
Have the last word. Oh, it's preventing serious illness and death. That's such a lie.
That's the propaganda.
I saw where that people that are vaccinated are the ones that are dying in the hospital now of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was Australia.
Yeah, and the fact that people are dying of this, they haven't seemed to notice. That's the weird part. In other words, like this is something I don't think Dr. McCullough quite addressed. Well, but the idea that people are, you know, the hospitals and doctors are being rewarded for killing people, that's morally acceptable. But it's not acceptable to save people with you know, cheap and effective cures. That's not acceptable. It's better to kill people with the approved government procedures than it is to save them with something that's not approved by the fascist, you know, big government, big pharma, you know, cabal. That is a huge moral dilemma right there. Back to you. I got you thinking.
Well, we enroll into my bill. I'm real excited to start pushing this bill because, I mean, if we can get rid of these machines.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So describe your bill. So now you're going to be a lobbyist for your own bill. So describe your bill, describe what's in it, describe why it's necessary, and fill folks in. Go for it.
Well, it's just a real challenging process, and Greg can testify to this because it's trying to find all the statutes that apply. And Dr. Redmond had told me, I mean, Dr. Redmond is our state representative for Florida, for Santa Rosa County, and I know him. He's promised to speak with us on legislation. I'm hoping he'll get behind this bill. I'm going to present it to him hopefully sometime in the next week. And we have quite a few people that have said that they will help get behind this bill. We need citizen lobbying to help get this bill passed. But if we have a selection, we're just going to keep trending on the way that America is going right now, which is not in a good direction. But if we don't get rid of the machines, if we don't have transparency and we don't get rid of these voting machines, I mean, can the normal person just walk up and look at a voting machine and tell if it's been, even if you find out it hasn't been hacked in 2020, then was it hacked in 2022? Was it hacked for the primary? Was it hacked for the November election? You have to open up these machines, have somebody who's, have experts looking at every single aspect of this machine, and it's ridiculous because there's no transparency. I have actually asked Kathy for the cost, Kathy Belain, our Secretary of Elections, and I've asked her, what is the cost of these machines too? And I had a ballpark figure somebody had thrown out. It's not about how we're from our county, but they had said that a machine comparable to ours was about $35,000 to buy. Now, we have, what, 47 different precincts. We have at least two of these machines, and we have the ESNS, a DS200. If we've got two machines in each camp, in each precinct, we have 47 precincts, and they're $37,000 apiece. That's a ridiculous amount of money. And I've asked her, what amount of money does it take to keep these machines up, for the software to pay ESNS to have these machines, to have them come back into whatever they do to them? And then also, we have the EVITs. Those are the books. It's like a poll book that you, when you walk in, they check you in. How much do those cost, and how much do we pay annually for those, too? Because we have four of them at every polling place that I worked at. So if you've got four of those for 47 different precincts, the cost is substantial. And so if we eliminated that cost, look how much money that we would save. And I think if we removed the if we took out the machines, we'd have to go old school, count the paper ballots, and but we'd get a team of volunteers.
So that's cheaper. How much would it cost to hire people, even if they had to hire 100 people in the county to count ballots? You know, you've got how many precincts? What, did you say 40-some-odd? 47 precincts?
47.
Let's just say 50 to make my math easy. So if you have 50 and you had five people.
But we would need more. We would need more precincts.
Well, even if you had a couple of hundred vote counters.
You need to have about 1,000. Well, you wouldn't want to have more than 1,000 registered voters per precinct. So you could actually count the votes that night. So you're going to need a lot more people, but you're going to need a lot less money.
Say you had 20, 30 people per precinct. That's still not, you know, that's still a lot cheaper than a $35,000 voting machine.
One $35,000.
One, exactly.
And you have two.
Well, I've been looking up web.
And each.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You have to have at least two, because if one of them fails, you have to have at least two machines per precinct. And some of them have four. I know that St. Sylvester's probably has a bunch. They're a huge precinct. That's our largest precinct in our county. And I have not worked over there, but they have a lot. So, I mean, that's a lot of money. So if we eliminated that amount of money, they're paying, I mean, as a poll worker, I think Tom and I made like $300 for working the election. We did a couple of days of early election. But I mean, it's like $300 for a worker. And yet, I don't know, we had like 10 workers at our precinct. That's a lot less cost.
Yes,
yeah,
so it's one-tenth.
The EVIDs and the...
You know, 300 workers is like $3,000 as opposed to $30,000. It's about one-tenth. Let me... I pulled up the DS200, which is the machine we have here in Santa Rosa County, Florida, with the website Verified Voting. So it says the ENS DS200 is a ballot scanning device. It is used most often to support polling locations with voters who hand-mark paper ballots, typically distributed at the polling place check-in station, and then hand-feed the paper ballots into the scanner in order to cast the ballot. Ballots can then be inserted into the DS200 in multiple orientations, face up, face down, header first, or footer first. The device simultaneously scans the front and the back of the paper ballot. And here's what gets interesting. It says interprets voter marks. I don't want my marks interpreted.
Yeah.
I don't want my marks interpreted. I want them counted. Okay. What do you mean interprets voter marks? Then it says communicate any issues that require voters. Yeah. Okay. I understand that.
And I mean, what they're trying to say is that if you have an X on there, they don't like it. If it doesn't fill in the bubble correctly, it doesn't like it. I think that's what they're trying to say. But it could also sound nefarious, too.
Well, it did to me. Well, here's the funny part. Here's the funniest part of this whole thing. The ENS, their location is 11208 John Galt Boulevard, Omaha, Nebraska. You know who John Galt is?
No,
you don't get the reference. Okay. John Galt is the hero of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. And the question is, who is John Galt? So the irony of an election-stealing device that's hackable, that has, you know, internet capability on John Galt Boulevard, who is the ultimate in freedom, you know, Ayn Rand, it's just one of those little things I noticed. Anyway, I can't find a price of this thing. I've looked at three sites while you've been talking, and nobody will tell me how much this thing costs.
Yeah, and that's why I went straight to our SOE. I'm like, how much is our county paying? So as soon as I get those numbers, I'll let you know. But, and I told her I didn't need an exact number. I said just spitball me, you know, just something in the ballpark.
Oh, wait a minute.
But
oh, I got one for you. It's worse than you thought. This is from Tazewell County Voter Registration and Elections. I'm not sure where Tazewell County is, but it says Tazewell County's Integrated Voting System. It says the system from Election Systems and Software, that's ESNS, includes 26 DS200 electronically scanned paper ballot machines, as well as 26 Express Vote machines. So 26, that's 52, right? The latter, which use technology similar to touchscreen equipment to generate data. The total cost for the machines
was Express Vote, too.
Okay, good. So the total cost for 52 machines, you got your calculator?
Yep.
It's the total cost for the machines was $250,000. So if you divide 250,000 by 52, what do you get?
$4,807.
No, that seems low. You sure? Huh. Oh, okay.
Five,
no, 52. Yeah. So let's go. 250,000. Let me do it too. 250,000 divided by 52 is, 4,800. That doesn't make sense. Oh, 4,000 times. Okay. So wait a minute. So that's not, we're not doing this right then. So that should be the cost of each one is 52 machines cost $4,800. Something's wrong. Our estimates are way out. Do you think these things only cost, I doubt these things only cost $5,000 bucks a piece.
But even if they did, that's still a ton of money. I mean, if you look at, even if they're, let's say they're $5,000 a piece. Let's just make it easy.
All right.
Okay. $5,000. Then we've got, we have to have two of them at each times two equals times 47. That's still $470,000 for the machine.
Half
that's
a million.
Just the ESNS machine. That's a volume.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot of money. I mean, that we could. And then that doesn't count how much money that they charge you annually to be able to come in and for each election. I mean, because you got to come in and do the primary, then you got to come in and do the real, you know, the November election. How much do they charge for that? I mean, but, man.
See, that should be public record, though, if it's for the elections office. You should be able to go to our election, our supervisor of elections, the SOE, and say, well, how much are you spending on voting machines? Let me see the budget. That should be public information.
Get a better deal on these. Somebody come up with something, but I want to do away with them, so I don't want a better deal. But
yeah, okay, so we're not going to worry about how much they cost, but we'll still keep checking on information, even if they're $5,000 each as opposed to $30,000 each. $30,000, you can buy a car for $30,000. So maybe the $5,000 is closer. Yeah.
But you have to look at the fact that we have to have the machines in SOE's office that count these ballots. Mm-hmm. How much do those cost?
Yeah.
Because those machines are huge and they're complicated. And so you've got to have that. Then you have to have the evens to be able to check people in. So that's just one aspect of the cost. So the savings for our county would be huge if we just went old school. And then we could select from volunteers, potentially retired people, like on a pension from the military or, you know, from first responders. Anybody who wanted to volunteer, but they'd have to do a background check on them. They'd have to be bonded. And then we'd videotape every single aspect of the vote counting so they can't lie. So, you know, if you just get back to old school, we could, if we have 1,000 people per precinct, we could have this knocked out by the end of the evening on election day and know who the winner was. And then everyone either walks back their results, drives it back to the SOE's office, or calls it in. And I don't know, it just would make it would make our votes actually count, where I don't think my vote actually counts. And
maybe a little louder. This is key what you're saying right now, so I want to make sure we get it to just a little bit louder on the podcast. Yeah, because it's a selection, not an election. And you can't trust the vote.
And that's actually. Absolutely. And also citizenship is key. And this goes right back to Pete Antonucci. And he was Governor DeSantis that appointed him to investigate election fraud. He was really worried about voter registration. And so my bill is in memory of Pete Antonucci.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so worried about the DMV and the applicants were just filling out these papers and sending them in and lying on them and getting to be registered voters because nobody was checking citizenship. Mm-hmm. So on my bill, I would like for the SOE to absolutely go in and check every single person's voter registration, or their citizenship. And then in your addition to the bill was to make everyone have to re-register every single year, just like you do with your voter or your car registration, so we could clean our bloated voter rolls. So all aspects of my bill.
Yeah. So you might want to do a little bullet point summary as we're writing this, put it on the Action Radio Election Integrity Project, that just say that your bill covers, you know, the voter registrations expire, that we're not going to have any machines, that we're going to be checking citizenship, that we're going to just the main provisions. Just make a little bullet point summary. And then when the bill comes out, people go, oh, that's cool, especially if you do it in the order that it appears in the bill. And then when they get the actual bill, people go, oh, I know that, you know, they'll have the bullet points in their head. And that way that'll be greatly facilitate sharing of the bill. So hopefully we can do this in the next couple of days. I don't think there's too much left to do based on what I've seen so far.
No. I really appreciate you helping me. It's so much more complicated than I ever dreamed it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a lot.
Talk about that too. People, tell me about your experience writing a bill from what you first thought before you even sat down at the keyboard to where you are now. Sort of walk me through that process.
Well, I had talked to Dr. Redman about it, and he's like, well, Diane, he goes, if you want to, you know, to help me, he goes, find the statute you want to change, strike through what you don't want, and write what you do want. Well, when you start changing statutes, it involves other statutes, and you've got to make sure that you find every statute that it coincides with, or if you're changing one, you got to change them all. And so that it just gets really complicated. You get into some weeds, and that's where you were a big help. So,
thank you.
And then you have to have them all in order. I had them all out of order, then I had to rearrange them and make sure that all the statute numbers are in sequential order.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish that the not having the machines could be the first one, but it's actually the last.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the very last one on my bill.
That's why you can do bullet points. You can say in your introduction, you can put that up front in your bullet points and say this bill, you know, number one, gets rid of voting machines. Number two, has all registrations expire at the end of the year, so the voter rolls are always cleaned. Number three, that we will do, you know, check for citizenship, you know, with verified, you know, means. Number four. And then you can put the bill order, anything you want. Now, here's the thing. Now that you've been through this process, how easy is it going to be to write your next bill?
Yeah, it'll be a lot easier. Well,
yeah.
I guess it depends on how many statutes are involved.
Well,
I'll know
more
what I'm doing. But,
see, part of the problem, part of the challenge with bill writing is deciding how much is enough. It's like, you know, when you're sculpting, you know, when do you stop the chisel? Okay, I'm done. You know, you do too much, you ruin it.
Yeah.
You don't do enough, it doesn't look good. Well, legislation is the same way. How much is enough? When are we done? When do we start another bill? Or when do we? I mean, these are all the decisions that you make. And the thing that's so crazy about this is that people are terrified of this process. People have asked me all the time, don't you have to be a lawyer to do that? No,
nope.
You just have to have a keyboard.
Nope.
You know, but who's going to approve it? Well, the legislature is going to approve it. Oh, you can submit stuff directly to the legislature? Why, yes, we can. How do you think the lobbyists get it in? They do it. You know, so if they can do it, I can do it. You know, and it's just, but these
and we want it.
Go ahead.
We want it in language that people can understand and not a lot of legal ease. I don't want to shell, thereby,
cool.
Or what is it they say? And
whereas?
Some of the
language. You won't see the word whereas in any of my bills. Mosley did that because Mosley knows Washington. So Jonathan Mosley writes a bill, right, on a liquidity corporation to help us get out of the COVID bankruptcies, you know, when all the money runs out, right? So we already had that bill, okay? But he does the traditional format, you know, whereas. And I never said, don't do whereas, just talk to people in English, you know. But the actual language, now that you've read actual legal language, it's complicated because it's badly written. It's not complicated because it's, you know, advanced legal theory. That's the problem. Right? Did you find that? Because that's what I find.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to agree with me. Not a problem. Listen to Josie sometime. But that's the thing. The biggest problem is that they don't write well.
Well, my next bill, I want the DMV to start adding citizenship onto our driver's license.
Now, did you see my bill on that?
Well,
I've already written
any identification.
I've already written one on that. Have you seen it?
Well, I sent one in to Action Radio. I didn't see it. Did you add
did?
That one or was that one was before?
I must be behind in my duties. Okay, let me take a look here.
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago.
I am behind in my duties. Yeah, see, this is why I need staff, so I don't have to do the administrative stuff. I can actually legislate. Okay, let's check the posts. Let's see.
We're getting a lot of backing for this bill, though. We've got a lot of people that can get behind us. I'm hoping that I can talk Josh Oder into doing some legislation with us, too, and hopefully we can get all of his group behind this bill as well. And I know the REC is we've got a whole bunch of patriots that have joined into our REC, which is wonderful, and they want to do a proclamation on this. I'm going to present it to them at our next meeting, and we'll be able to have an actual documented proclamation to go with it from the REC.
What's your title of your bill?
I don't remember. Adding citizenship to driver's license.
Okay. I don't see it here.
I don't remember.
When did you send it? A couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, the last bill I have is from 2022, December 9th. I don't see your bill. Did you send it in? Did you submit it? And did it give you a response at all?
On the site.
Yeah.
No.
Huh.
It was really short and sweet. I found the statute and I wrote it in like 10 minutes.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, an idea is fine. I just don't see it. That's why I'm kind of curious. Because I'm looking at stuff back here through 2022 and I don't see it.
So I'll rewrite it. How about that?
Yeah, just
pop
it in again.
I'll let you know the day that I do it.
Yeah. Because I don't get rid of bills. I mean, I just, you know, if they're not good, let me see. Oh, we have comments now. Let's see, I'm doing my legislator now. Okay. See, the problem with comments is people put a lot of spam in there, too. Okay, these look pretty good comments. That one looks pretty good, too. I don't see any adverse stuff, so let's get those in there. Well, see, a lot of people heard this interview today. This was a big show. And so it's going to be very interesting to take a look at the after effects of this, especially with Dr. McCullough, like I said, already tweeting. We can just vamp for the next 20 minutes because I've already accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish today, so I'm really happy. This is good.
You're going to have that adrenaline high today, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be adrenaline. Are you kidding?
You're going to need a nap.
I'll be dancing up when the crash comes. And this is for folks that don't know, if you've never done radio, there are days that are very emotional. This is one of them because, you know, and I'll fess up. I do get nervous before interviews with big people just because I want to make sure that everything's done and I do a good job and I don't say something stupid or ask a dumb question. I want to make sure that – and I get the information covered. And we did. And I got everything covered that I wanted to with Dr. McCullough. And of course everybody wants to talk to him. So he's like, save it for next time. You know, sorry, but, I made that mistake before too, trying to, you know, let too many callers come in and we get distracted from our purpose. And so now with someone like Dr. McCullough, it's very focused, very directed. I've got a ton of questions. I got to about a third of them, of the things I've written down, you know, but, it's a process. It's an emotional process. And then when it's done, even on a regular day, I still have this big adrenaline rush. You try concentrating for three, this is not you, but anybody who's listening, try concentrating absolutely 100% for 3 hours on anything. It's not easy to do. And then when it's over, you know, I just crash for a couple hours and then get up and, you know, hit the bike ride or do something else. But it's a very emotional thing to do a radio. If you're doing a good job, I think you get very involved in your topics. And you have to, because you got to care about what you're doing unless you're just doing it for ratings. But that's what happened. So today, I'll be dancing around all day. See some guy walking down the street, Main Street in Milton, going, la, 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 skipping down the street, that's me. So, anything else I could have done or anything else in election integrity or medical freedom or Pianki saw when he talked about the fact that football players, you know, how many football players have to, you know, have massive coronaries on the field before they start telling the truth about it?
Coffee and COVID, Jeff Childers had a really good response to all that. It was a couple of days ago.
What was that?
I don't remember exactly, but he said that, you know, people have to stop dancing around this and spinning in the room. Nobody wants to talk about it. And so he's awesome. That's somebody that I really wish that we could tap into because
it's funny you should say that. I'm talking to his staff folks. Yeah, where it's in the process. There's a lot of folks in process. You know, I'd love to get Steve Kirsch on too. You know, I mean, you know, but Jeff Chill is. I'm hoping to get Jeff on. I actually met Jeff at the first rally in Pensacola, and so
I sat and talked to him at multiple different events. But
okay, good. Well, why don't you call his office then? Call his office. Tell me you have.
Yes. Well, I've tried contacting him multiple times, and the only way I really know how to do is in the comments. I read his blog every day. I followed him for probably a year and a half.
No, he's got a law office in Gainesville. I've called his office directly. I actually have a contact person there. And so I remind my contact every once in a while. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was one of the first people that he got the mask mandate taken away from the city of Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
So he saved those employees for the city of Gainesville. And but I've had multiple conversations with him at different events, and he seems like a really nice guy. And he's he brings a lot of humor into things as well, but he's very blunt. And if you on my personal
blunt.
Facebook page, I quote him all the time.
Like blunt. We do blunt very well here. You know, Dr. McCullough was pretty direct too. This is a military, CDC, Department of Defense operation. I was like, okay. So I got to start reading about that more now.
I know. I walked in and I told Tom, my husband, I said, you need to listen to this one today. I was very...
Oh, I knew it was going to be good. I just didn't know where he was going to go with it because, I like to let people talk. And contrary to popular belief, I actually do. Especially it's like, go ahead. When your answer's done, it's like, I've always got more stuff. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens now with this legislation, when people start asking, what is this vaccine product liability bill? Because he talks to everybody. He talks to millions of people, right? I mean, I don't know how many interviews he does per day. And he still sees patients. He's still a regular doctor. He's actually out there in the field doing, the work, unlike Dr. Fascist, who hasn't, I don't think ever saw
Exactly. He's never seen it. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I wanted to say to Dr. McCullough. You actually see patients and actually see the harm. And Fauci's just hiding in his basement.
Well, see, that's the difference between the early treatment doctors, too. Every one of those early treatment doctors, the only exception would be Dr. Judy Mikovits, because she's not a medical doctor. She's a PhD in molecular biology and virology, I think. But so she doesn't see patients, but she certainly helps people. She develops vaccines.
But she's got the history. She's got the history on Fauci. She's watching him live for decades.
Oh, yeah, EZT. Well, we did a show that I'm still convinced. This is another thing I want to ask Dr. McCullough when I get a chance. But two things. One, did Dr. Fascist kill Freddie Mercury of Queen with AZT? That's the first question. And the second question.
Probably.
We did a show on that. My conclusion was yes, because I looked at the timeline of when AZT came out, when Freddie Mercury died. Yes. Yeah, it seems to me. And the fact that they didn't use Bactrin. Bactrin is the treatment that the New York doctors wanted to study that was cheap. Effective, already approved, and it was working on AIDS patients, and so Bactrin. Is it the Bactrin or Bactrim? Is it with an N or an M? I forgot, but you can look it up and look up don't look up Dr. Fascist. You won't get the right place. That's just my name for him. But look up Dr. Fauci, Anthony Fauci, and Bactrim and the New York study, and you'll see that he did exactly the same thing crushing Bactrin and replacing it with AZT, which doesn't work. Exactly what he did with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, saying that they don't work when they do, and pushed remdesivir and his gene jab. So he follows his form, just like the military followed their military model. The military-industrial complex permanent war class model is exactly what they're doing now with the gene jab, which is fascinating. I never made that connection. That alone was worth having Dr. McCullough on. That was incredible. And so now with all these revelations, I got to think about all this stuff and go, now what do we do? but he said it. Vaccine product liability is critical. So maybe he can talk to Senator Johnson. Maybe something will come of this. Maybe the next hearing. Maybe it'll be. Maybe those that are listening that know Matt Gaetz, our congressman here in the first congressional district of Florida, send him this show. Send him that first hour because it all goes together in a package. Send him the show and say, look, here's Dr. McCullough on vaccine product liability. Beg your pardon?
You just gave me a really good idea.
Ooh, tell me. Is it on the air idea or off the air?
I probably should talk to you off the air.
Okay.
Yeah, but I have a connection that has a connection, a really good one.
Ooh, you know people who know people. See, you're my best friend now.
Well, it's military.
Okay.
It would be military. It would be pilot, like flight surgeon, surgeon type people.
Okay, that's enough. Yeah, okay. Keep working on that. See, and this is how this works. See, you know, this show has never been about my ego. It's always been about empowering everybody else to get that creative, inspiration going and just run with it. You know, so run with it.
But
talk
I'm talking about how we get to Ron Johnson, because that would be that connection.
Yeah, that's what we need. Ron Johnson's the key because he's the one who's holding the hearings. You don't see any member of the House. As much as the House Freedom Caucus is doing good work, not one of them joined that Senate hearing. Why didn't they? What, because it's in the Senate? Not one other senator joined in. Ron Johnson is the only one holding hearings on this stuff.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're only talking. It's not helping. I mean, they're only talking about it. So that's why
we
need to move the needle, you know.
Well, let's say Peter McCullough, Dr. McCullough, next time he goes to a hearing with Senator Johnson, because there's going to be more. We're not over with this. What if he says, Senator Johnson, I have here legislation written by citizens that would put full product liability on vaccine manufacturers. What do you think? Can you introduce this into Congress? Can you support this? Can you get other senators to support this? Can we make this become a reality? That changes everything. That's what I'm hoping for. I was hoping for it last time, too.
Definitely.
With another doctor who will remain nameless, but anyway. But you never know. You know, it's – see, people
– we get it coming from multiple different directions, then that could be helpful as well.
Oh, hugely. Okay. But think about this, too. This is so new to people. People, they don't know how this works. So there's a certain measure of faith. Anybody associated with Action Radio has faith. They have faith that this is the right way to go, that this is a brand-new frontier, that we have to try it because they've already taken away our elections. They've taken away our candidates. They put nothing but corrupt – parties put nothing but corrupt – well, almost nothing but corrupt candidates, you know, to run for office. So they're not good. They're beholden to the party, right? So that doesn't work. The elections themselves are stolen, so that doesn't work. You know, writing, calling, you know, their offices doesn't work because you don't have the money that the lobbyists have. So that doesn't work. So what's left? The only thing, this is what the conclusion I came to back in 2014. The only thing that's left that we can have a direct effect on is the laws themselves. And that's how Action Radio came about, for that reason.
Yeah.
Because we can write the laws and Congress can go back and put something totally different. Say, here's your vaccine product liability. And I'll look at all the loopholes. I said, that's not what we wrote. I said, this is what we wrote.
They're talking about, talking about people wearing purple underwear.
Wasn't that hysterical?
<And that's laughs>
you like that one? Purple polka dot underwear. Yeah, it's the purple polka dot underwear amendment. So right after, you know, X billions of dollars for the cockroach mating fund, you know, analysis, right? We'll have a clause that says all members of Congress must wear purple polka dot underwear, you know, when they're on the floor of Congress. And it has to be on the outside so we can check. I would just want to see that in a bill, just for the fun of it.
Well, I'm hoping what Matt Gaetz put in, that they limit it to one subject, right? So,
well, that's been tried before.
Stop the nonsense and be able to veto out the pork.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's our bills have that. All our bills
proud
are.
Of Matt.
Well, yeah, but where is he? How come he's not here? How come he's not on the show?
Yeah,
I mean, we're in his district.
He
was on the show.
Exactly.
He used to be on every week. Calling Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz, where are you? We know he's out there somewhere. We'll start a campaign. Yeah. Has anybody seen Matt Gaetz? You know, I used to make fun of him, too. We lost Matt Gaetz. We know he's out there somewhere. Open the gates. Gaetz, come on back in. You know, I used to make fun of him, too, at the rallies when I said the reason he stopped talking to us, he stopped talking to us when he started wearing hair gel. You remember that?
Yeah.
It's true, though. Sorry, Matt. You know,
well,
when you became a superstar
a
in media.
Man. He's on.
Yeah.
He's on all types of new shows now. So he's made a name for himself. And I can see him having a future, a big future in politics. I mean,
of course,
I could see him wanting to run as governor soon.
Well, there's a bunch of things, the cabinet secretary, governor, any number of things. And then, you know, the ambassador to Bermuda, you know, someday when he wants to retire. I mean, who knows? But he's already well enough known that. But see, now if he got behind vaccine product legislation, vaccine product liability, that would be huge. And he's in our district. So we know people that know him. I know him. Just not well enough, apparently. He's not here, you know. So we're calling out. We're calling out Matt Gaetz to come join us here. 215-383-3832. Call in anytime. Call in from your cell phone in the airplane. I don't care. They've got like flight whatever that thing is, that air phone. You know, we're only here 3 hours a day. It's not that hard to reach us. Hell, I even drag my computer microphone down to his office. We'll do a live video, live show right from there. I don't care. Let's go. Anyway, we've got about 5 minutes left. Anything we haven't covered of vital importance? Anything on your mind?
I lost you.
Oh. Yeah, you can't hear me?
Yeah, I can. No. I lost you
right.
For a little bit. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
I think my internet
connection
got
well,
off.
Actually, apparently there was, and this might have caused some of our problems yesterday, there was a fire at one of the internet centers. I may have blamed Blog Talk erroneously, but I don't think so, because I didn't have an end episode button. I didn't have a direct connect that was working. It said I had no show schedule when I was watching it click down. There was all kinds of problems yesterday. Anyway, so
I'm glad it worked today.
Yeah. Well,
very
you know,
happy
and,
it worked
you know,
today.
Thanks, God. Appreciate the help. You know, some divine intervention goes a long way. But generally, the shows that are really critical, everything works. You know, and say knock
on wood.
You better
knock on wood.
Generally.
There you go.
You know, and I always do a little prayer before a big show. You know, it's like, please, you know, I try not to ask for too much, but I really need this one. So, you know.
Well, you know, if that did shut down, do you have a way to just go ahead with the interview and tape it and then just put it on the blog, you know, later?
I can but I like the live show. I really don't want to do just a monologue of me. But I could schedule,
yeah.
I could record. You can't, Blog Talk has the capacity, you can record it. But I think there's something that you lose. You lose the spontaneity and you lose the honesty. See, everybody knows the show is recorded live. I don't edit.
Yeah.
You really can't, you know. And so good or bad, you know, and there's some things that, you know, people will call me back and say, well, can you edit that part out or can I only get this portion of the show? No. I don't edit.
Yeah.
And there's no way to get portions. So that's why I do show notes. So people can click anywhere in the show they want to go. So if they just want to hear Peter's interview, I'm calling first name now, Dr. McCullough's interview, you know, you just start the show. And he was on for almost, like, he was here, I think he left, 3 minutes? You know, before the top of the hour, raced to his TV interview, did that in 5 minutes, came back and started tweeting on our bills. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'll be dancing all day on that one. That's how...
The beauty about our show is that you can do it in your pajamas from home.
Yeah, I do.
I love it.
But
and
not
that
purple
way
polka dot anywhere.
I don't
have any of that. So,
yeah.
You know, exactly. Yeah.
Who would know?
That's true. It's radio. Well, actually, that came about from I did an experiment. I must have an underwear thing because like a year or two ago, we were discussing. No, it's like my favorite go-to place for stupid examples, right? And so we were talking about how Facebook takes what you say and or anything you look up online immediately appears as an ad later. So we're live on the air, and I forgot when I did this. This is pre-COVID, so this would have been 2019. You know, fall or earlier, before we even knew about, you know, the World Economic Forum and the whole bit. And we're talking about, I said, well, let's do an experiment. I forgot who's online. What do you want to do? Well, I'm going to start looking up zebra-striped underwear. That was my thing then, as opposed to purple polka dot. I said, I'm going to look up zebra-striped underwear and see how long it takes to appear in Facebook and appear on my websites. Half an hour. Swear to God, half an hour. You know, all of a sudden I'm looking at, you know, so I'm on Facebook. And so I type in zebra striped underwear, and you guys can try this too. You know, just pick a product that you're never going to get, right? And just because that's like the control mechanism, you know, fuzzy pink handcuffs. I mean, I don't care what it is. Just pick something weird, you know, just pick something weird, put it into a search engine and see how long it takes before you get an ad, you know, or pick a place, you know, trips to, I don't know, Zanzibar, just pick a city anywhere in the world, you know, Ulaanbaatar. So, you know, latest tours to Ulaanbaatar. Do you know where that is? Just that a trivia question.
No.
It's the capital of Mongolia. I don't know how I know that, but I do. Right. Anyway, so it's one of those weird things in my brain. So if you start looking up, look up Ulaanbaatar. I wanted to, you know, tours to Ulaanbaatar, singles travel to Ulaanbaatar, group tours to Ulaanbaatar, cruises to Ulaanbaatar. Of course, there won't be any because it's in a mountain. Right. You know, it's Mongolia. But all of a sudden you'll get all these things will come, you know, hey. here's our latest travel. You know, you'll get charters and cruises, and well, not cruises, but you get all kinds of things, tours to Ulaanbaatar. They'll just show up. I get guitar ads constantly. Every time I look up a guitar, you know, Facebook Marketplace immediately comes with all these junk barking guitars for sale. You know, try it. Look up something. It doesn't take long. It's fascinating.
Hey, there was one other thing that I just remembered that I wanted to mention.
Please do.
Steve Kirsch, on his newsletter, he had said something about the FAA has very quietly, tacitly admitted that the EKGs of pilots are no longer normal. Mm-hmm. We should be very concerned. So,
we should be.
I actually looked into this. I got on the FAA website, and I tried to find the parameter, the range change, what they acquire. I couldn't find it anywhere on the site. I was for 20 minutes. So if anybody knows that, call it in. Call it back to me if anybody can find that. And I'm going to ask Josh Yoder if he knows about any of this as well. Because if they're changing the parameters for the EKGs, how safe is that? You know, they changed it from, to where one of the parameters, they didn't even put a limit on it. So, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, Steve Kirsch's newsletter. I get it. I'm going to go over, I've got it right here. FAA has very quietly, tacitly admitted that the EKGs, those are the pilot monitoring, you know, checks, of pilots are no longer normal. We
of
should
your
be concerned.
Heart. Of your
very
heart,
concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the EKG. Yeah, electrocardiograph. I believe is the correct term. You'd be a nurse. You could tell me.
Cardiogram.
Okay, excuse me. Cardiogram.
You're fine.
Okay, good. we do strive for accuracy here. All right, we're done. We're actually off the air. And so for folks that are live, it does cut off at the end of 3 hours. They give us a little bit of overtime though, just to kind of tie things up. But I'm done. This is great. I got to go text Dr. McCullough two bills and two websites so that he can post it everywhere. Isn't this fun?
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, join us. A good time.
Good job.
Yeah. Good job for you, too. Let's get on that bill. Let's finish that. And then after I have my collapse and breakfast, or probably breakfast and then collapse, I'll be available to do some work on this. And let's keep doing what we do best.
Very good.
All right.
And we'll
Thank
be
you,
on
Diane.
Next week at 9 o'clock. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, next weekend, next Wednesday at 9 a.m. for that central time for Diane Live. Okay, I've covered everything I can think of here. So the only thing left to do is a little musical selection to take us on our way. Let me see. This is appropriate too. So I've been trying to play a little classical music. You know, once I get all the things that I have to play done, then I can just do things that I want to play. And this is one of my favorites. Let me see if I can find it here. I have a different mouse I'm using. My original one could have left. All right, let's play a musical selection. Back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time. I'm going to try and get Brianna Cannon back to do her government inquiry report. We have Jerome Bell, who ran for Congress, so I want to hear that story. That's going to be fascinating. And so let me just turn back my calendar here, see what time he is. I'm pretty sure I know, but just in case. Jerome Bell is at 9 a.m. So I've got the first 2 hours open, 9 a.m. for Jerome Bell, and who knows what between now and tomorrow what we'll have in the middle of the show. And this is going to be fun. So I'll see you all tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, and if you want to contribute here to make us a worldwide force for freedom, that would be givesendgo.com/actionradio, givesendgo.com/actionradio. We'll be right back.